following podcast contains mature language and spoilers. Listener discretion is advised.
Well, I think Mac's the least compromised, so he should be the showrunner.
Nah. I'm not going to fucking run this show.
You saw it twice.
With this shit. You've seen you it, twice. It twice. You run this shit.
Why should just because I saw it twice?
Yeah, so
because you have more perspective. How many fucking times has this guy seen a movie twice before we started a recording? He didn't run those fucking shows.
Well, from now on, maybe we need to get him to start leading it, you dipshit.
I would have done the Batman Superman one if you went and watched it with us.
I still haven't seen that movie.
If you were there, we would have.
But we're fucking spiraling out of control here, where we should probably tighten our shit up.
What do you mean?
We should actually
do the podcast.
Okay. Well, we just needed to vent that out for a moment.
Okay, we're good. Who wants to do the intro?
Hey everybody, welcome back to Super Heroes Podcast. I'm Malin Machine.
I'm Mr. Fix-It.
And I'm Diablo Frank.
And today we're going to talk about Captain America Civil War.
Da, 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 da.
Captain America Civil War.
So, which was better, Dawn of Justice or Civil War?
You mean Avengers 3. I thought it was an Avengers.
That's not a particularly profound statement. I think that's pretty commonly assumed that this is an Avengers movie, yeah. Which I actually think might be hurting it because I'm not sure how people received Age of Ultron. They might have not received Ant-Man as well as we would have thought. And that might have impact on the opening weekend.
You think so?
Well, because they downgraded it from expectation of 200 million plus to 180 million, which when you give or take 20 million on most movies, that's their entire weekend. With this movie, they can afford to gain or lose $20 million without it being a big deal. But me and Mac were talking about it when we were riding around picking up Raising Cane's. You sponsor Raising Cane's.
Raising Cane's does one thing, quality chicken finger meals, and we do it better than anybody else.
Hey,
delicious. Anyhow, so yeah, we were concerned that maybe between the impact of Dawn of Justice being terrible, from what I understand, I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to that movie. But between that and the expectations of that movie and people maybe falling into deep depressions, realizing that they just saw a horrible Superman and Batman movie, and looking at the future of all those other DC movies, might have been turned off for them. The last few Marvel movies maybe weren't that into. So and the other thing too is Mac and I both think that maybe the movie's a little early. Like maybe it needed to come out a few weeks to a month later into the summer when the kids are actually out of school already. It just seems a little soon. I know they've done well with that date before, but between the fatigue and starting before the kids are out, that probably is going to hurt it. Well, on the opening weekend, I think it's going to play long though.
Well, I was gonna say, as long as they don't have that drastic drop like Superman in them, if they don't have that drastic
drop, it's not a 28% on Rotten Tomatoes bad kind of movie, so I would hope not.
Because I'm planning to see it again. I'm like, I'm going to go see it again.
I saw it twice on Friday. So
both times on Friday?
Yeah, both of them were on Friday. Let me be honest with you. Because Matt got a little pissed off when he found out that I had seen it, even though I had told him there's no way I'm waiting until Friday night to see this fucking movie.
No, I was pissed off because I thought you said he had seen it too. And I was like, you both went and fucking saw it?
Well, he was going to go see it. We actually talked briefly about seeing it together.
Did you guys briefly include me in these conversations?
No, because
you were permanently assholes.
Oh, yeah, no, that's true.
You're the one who bought the fucking tickets for Friday. So my assumption is that's going to be your day.
When I suggested what day we're going to go see it, you should have said, you know what? I think I'd rather see it Thursday night. And then we could have fucking worked some shit on Thursday night. Why are you bringing this up and making me upset? I just knocked something
well,
over.
Well, the reason why I bring it up is because I was tired. I was trying to adjust to another work schedule going from nights to days. And I was struggling with that. I took a nap right before the early showings at the nearest movie theater. I didn't like any of the seating arrangements. I didn't want to deal with that big. But I woke up just in time where I could have caught like a 11 o'clock showing. And I decided, you know what? I was tired. I've been tired all day. Let me get a good night's sleep. And I'll get up early and I'll see the first showing on Friday morning. I'm off on Friday. Take advantage of that. And that way I can see the movie fresh, right? So I skipped that 11 o'clock showing. And then I could not fucking go to sleep. Plus, I was watching a Jimmy Fallon clip. And right after the Jimmy Fallon clip, they showed the shot of Black Panther grabbing Hawkeye's arrows and them exploding in his face, which I hadn't seen before.
Oh, that's
so good. So I'm like, God damn it. I've got a moment lost by not seeing this showing. And it just stressed me out. I was tired. I couldn't sleep good. I think I was waking up almost every hour on the hour most of the night. It was causing me like physical turmoil, not to the degree you are experiencing, but I was just tired. And in fact, when I went in to watch an early show on Friday, and I was kind of like, I was closing my eyes during some of the previews, especially that stupid fucking Deepwater Horizon movie. You know, that shit was making me mad. I was actually getting angry that movie existed, especially when they're talking about a movie about the real heroes. They're fucking profiteers who fucking wreck the environment, and then people who made a lot of money try to figure out multiple failed ways to fix the fucking shit they broke before they finally fucking fixed it after all this fucking environmental disaster happened. And you're gonna make a movie about the real heroes of the Deepwater Horizon? There's no fucking thing! There's no such thing! Give me a fucking break. So yeah, makes me mad. Really angry. And Mark Wahlberg does not help.
Yeah, I think that they're trying to spin like the dude. I guess maybe he saved some other people on Deepwater Horizon.
Okay.
So he's like a hero for saving other people. But
it makes it seem like they're showing like all these guys who are, I don't know, it's
men of the earth. They're trying to humanize.
I think it just feels like a spin on this
total spin. It's total spin. You're right. No, there were no heroes. This should be about a lawyer who's taking down BP, not about the oil worker. I mean, very tragic. Some of those dudes died. Man, they're just there trying to earn a fucking paycheck.
Yeah.
Right? They don't give a shit
about, just it. Sell it as a catastrophe.
Right.
Sell it as a drama. Don't sell it as the heroes
they're trying to make
bullshit.
It like a Perfect Storm or some or the other movie with
They're just out fucking getting
some other
fish.
Fucking movie about some Boston guys who get trapped out on a fucking boat because there's a billion of those motherfuckers.
Hey, that one about the greatest rescue in U.S. Coast Guard history, that thing make any money? Did it even come out?
I didn't realize did it come out?
I think it already came out. Yeah.
But hey, get the chowder ready. It's cold outside. We need to get in this boat. Sully.
So back to the movie.
Yeah. So anyway, so I'm like closing my eyes during the previews, and it wasn't until the movie started rolling out that I finally started waking up. I think it gave my heart enough, you know, of a kick that by the
time. Wait, was this the first time you saw it?
This is the first time, yeah.
Okay. I'm getting confused because you saw it so many times, so.
Right. So it energized me enough to where within the first 15 minutes or so of the movie, I was coming back. But I did have a problem because I wasn't sure if it was fatigue or if the fucking shaky cam in the opening action sequence of that movie was just completely green grass. Out of control.
Now, was the theater packed?
What are we talking about? Are we talking about the movie now? Or are we going to talk about our experiences before seeing the movie? Because you just talked about your experiences before seeing
the movie. Hold on.
We can talk about my experiences.
Was it theater packed? Okay. Was it theater packed?
It wasn't, actually, thankfully. Really? Yeah. Huh. And they had really nice seats. It's like a recliner.
Yeah.
You've got, look, the armrest is like 8 inches across. And it has an inset cup holder.
Which means it's probably actually 5.
Huh? Go ahead. And it has an inset cup holder. It has semi-reclining leather seats, and they're wide and plush. It was very comfortable.
I was just wondering if those theaters were like the early showings were packed or not. Like,
and it was cheap to sit in those seats. Yeah.
So then are we going to talk about our experiences before the movie?
Have that, guys.
Mine just pissed me off because I bought these tickets all in advance, and I get the thing, and the chick only, there's supposed to be 4 of us, right? She prints 2 tickets and goes, "You had 2?" And I said, "No, I had 4." And she was like, "Oh, well, the machine ran out of tickets, so I have to get more." So when she reloads the tickets, it doesn't print anymore because the machine thinks it's printed them all, and she can't get it to print anymore. So the fucking manager writes 3 on the back of my 1 ticket because they tore my ticket so I can get through, so I had 1 more ticket for 3 people. Well, the thing is, you're supposed to, you leave them up front, or one of you 2 guys show up and give one of you guys the ticket and say, "Hey, whenever we get the call, the rest of the group's here, they can run to the front because there's going to be a gigantic line," right? Instead, I spent 15 minutes fucking arguing with these assholes, and meanwhile, I'm watching the line get larger and larger and larger and larger until finally they're just like, "No, no, no, we told all the ticket terrors, they're just going to know. They're just going to know that they're with you." And I'm like, "Whatever, dude." So I go to the back of the line and they start letting people in, and then Frank here shows up and I don't have any tickets to hand him. So I have to walk over and like tap the lady's shoulder and say, "Hey, they're supposed to be allowed to come in." I show her the ticket sign. At this point, everybody already got in the movie theater, and I wanted to probably take a lot of pills or something. I don't know. I was pretty upset.
Speaking of taking a lot of pills.
Yeah, no, I hurt myself, so I threw my back out. So this movie was definitely an unusual experience.
Yeah.
So thank y'all
because you sit down in your seat, and you're having enormous
back spasms, yeah.
Gigantic, like, troubling. You have, like, the fear of God in your face.
Oh,
back
dude,
spasms.
I haven't had a decent night's sleep in 2 days because of the back spasm. I literally can lay down for 15 minutes, and then I'm jumping out of bed because I'm screaming in pain.
So then fix it because the pain is so bearable to sit down, stood, and watch the whole movie standing up.
Well,
that's
but only
dedication.
After
that's dedication.
Yeah,
but I still was having spasms. I would sit there and just grit my teeth and just try not to disturb the people around me. So
yeah. But only after spending 10 minutes trying to deal with how we were going to deal with your back spasms and how we were going
to
do the seating arrangements. I'm sending Paquita out to get refreshments, and she's back and forth, and the people next to us are shooting us dirty looks. And then Mac is super pissed off to the point where he's about ready to walk out of the fucking movie entirely, and you know our seats are kind of off to the side a bit, you know, it was just one fucking thing after another.
Yeah.
So this movie needed to be really fucking good to justify all the shit that we were going through to see it.
And
but of course I was comfortable because I knew that it was worth it.
Yeah.
So I just had to make sure you guys could make it to the start of the movie and then you'd be fine.
So here, do we want to like recap the whole movie, or do you want to just say this is. Can you chronologically go through the parts of the movie that you liked, and maybe we can just talk about those parts?
A little bit. We could do a little bit. I want to say right off the bat, let's just like instead of it being very organized, we'll just be disorganized.
Well, that's what
Civil War. All the heroes are all over the fucking place fighting each other. Okay, thing number one.
Well, I don't know if you heard. That's what we did on the Batman Superman.
Yeah, podcast.
Yeah.
We did a really good review of Batman.
I listened to it. It was good.
Oh, did you?
Good
hear it?
Job,
okay.
Guys. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You didn't leave any comments, so I wasn't sure.
Did anybody leave comments?
Yeah, we got some comments.
Cool. Yeah, we got some comments.
Cool. I could have done without the... Who's the fucking Twee guy? The guy like Royal Tenenbaums and all that kind of shit?
Yeah. Didn't they say his last name
was Wes Anderson. I could have done without the Wes Anderson filling the entire screen with the names of places shit. That would bother me.
You meant where they...
Yeah.
It was like, boom!
Budapest.
Lagos.
Budapest. Lagos.
Yeah.
Cleveland.
Yeah. Because they didn't do that in The Winter Soldier, and I did not think that The Winter Soldier was a lesser movie for not having gigantic typeface every 5 minutes when they move to another dinner. Now I get
counterpoint. Who cares?
It just bothered me because it's a distraction because the movie's trying really hard to be grounded in a reality, and then those giant letters kind of distract me. I just wanted the little bullshit, you know, and Washington D.C.
Yeah, but we just said Lagos.
Yeah,
like if they would have just put it in the little type at the bottom, would we remember Lagos?
Yeah, because then they talk about it a lot over the course of the movie. They do.
I think sometimes I ignore that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I could have done without that. I also could have done without all the fucking shaky cam at the early part of the movie. And it was weird because they actually showed a scene from the opening action sequence where the Avengers are in Lagos trying to stop terrorists from getting a biological agent. They showed a clip of that on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. the week before the movie came out. And it wasn't, I don't remember it being so herky-jerky. So, and I saw the movie twice and it felt herky-jerky both times. You guys said you were okay with it, though.
Yeah, let me tell you something. I fucking hate that John Woo shaky cam bullshit.
Was that John Woo? I think of Paul Greengrass because the Bourne movies were really big on that shit. Now Greengrass did it better than most.
Who the fuck cares? This is a Captain America podcast. Start some other stream.
Well, no, because if you look at Ed Brubaker when he was redoing Captain America in the early 2000s, clearly the Bourne movies and books were a major reference point for him in figuring out what to do with Captain America in the modern era. And I think that has informed the movies, particularly the last two, Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Okay, anyway, so I don't like the shaky cam stuff. I had zero problem with the shaky cam.
Okay.
It didn't bother me even in the slightest bit. So I don't know what they did differently to make me not hate it. Because, again,
I think the action was very well paced.
But that's what I think it's because usually they do the shaky cam to overcome poor special effects or bad acting, right? Like
bad fight scene.
Or bad choreography.
Yeah.
Except if you shake the camera around. I thought the choreography, dude, Black Widow kicked so much fucking ass in this movie. Her fight scenes blew me away in every fucking scene of this film. All of them. Every time, whoever her stunt double is super fucking rad.
Absolutely.
And every time she was going to get ready to square off with somebody, I was like, yes, I want to see when she fought Winter Soldier, when she was chasing all those dudes.
Dude, I love that she was doing that shit with her legs, like wrapping herself around and throwing
which has kind of been her deal. Right? But it didn't seem tired to me. Instead, it was like, this is just her deal. That's how she fights. I felt like all the punches, there was weight behind the punches, like real.
Sometimes an excessive amount.
Yeah, especially Cap's. Oh my gosh. I mean, I just thought all the fighting in this movie, but especially, I really absolutely loved that opening scene.
I liked Crossbone.
I loved all the Crossbone stuff.
I thought he looked great.
I loved all of it. I don't know what, probably one of my favorite opening scenes, definitely of any of these comic book movies. I think it's blew away Age of Ultron's opening scene. Remember I told you, I thought there were some inconsistencies in the special effects of the Age of Ultron's opening scene. And I've seen it again recently, and Iron Man looks terrible in all that scene. I don't know what the, Age of Ultron, fuck that movie. But I was riveted at the very beginning of this movie in that fight scene. I couldn't get enough. I loved it.
One thing I really liked about Black Widow 2 is that there were similarities both in body type and in fighting styles between like the three main fighters, like Cap and Black Panther and Bucky. And what I liked about Black Widow is she was so much faster and her body mechanics were so much different that you could see she had a whole other thing going on. It was kind of like a video game, you know, where they would have different special moves and stuff. And I just loved Black Widow's special moves were really awesome and it looked great. My problem with the shaky cam was because the action choreography was so good, I didn't want that distraction, but I'm glad it didn't bother you guys, and for the most part it didn't bother me. I could get past it.
No, I it never affected me once.
Yeah, and I think I'll have an easier time with it on the home too. Maybe that was just the problem, is watching it on the big curved screens, watching in IMAX. It might just give me a ocular disturbance or something.
The 3D too might not help.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, are we over 3D yet?
Yeah, let's not see any.
Let's
more
not
3D
see any more 3D movies.
I do like the IMAX if we can get a good seat.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with IMAX, but yeah, I'm tired of watching gray screens all the time, and I don't know if it's a technical issue or I honestly think it's just my brain. Every time I watch a 3D movie, you know, like about 15 minutes in or so,
I forget it's
even there. I don't see the depth anymore. It just doesn't matter.
With me, man, I think I had a fucking smudge on my glasses. I could not.
No,
get rid
I did,
of
yeah. Dude. Yeah, those were used. I had tried to wash or clean mine like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah,
because the top of mine were all smudgy.
Yeah, well, that was another problem we were having is we're trying to rush in with the whole ticket situation, and I tried to grab some glasses, and Paquita grabbed some glasses.
What I hate about it,
I literally dropped like 8 different pairs of 3D glasses into the bin afterward because we were just juggling all this shit.
Well, no, but the thing that sucks about AMC is they give you reused glasses, or at least when we go to the other theater, they give you
they're
like a packaged.
Yeah, like they've been taken and cleaned, and
you know, honestly, mine. Whoever was using mine, it must have grease or something because there was a huge smudge, which kind of ruined it for me. I kept taking them off during the movie, which bothered me.
By the way, I have to say, I watched the Doctor Strange trailer twice, both showings, and I really appreciated the 3D in the trailer. They did a great job. Like, there's these diaphanous curtains where you're seeing characters past the curtains, and of course, you're seeing all that Inception bullshit. And so, the 3D in the Doctor Strange trailer was very impressive because I barely kept my eyes open during the 2D version of it because I'm just don't give a shit.
Really?
I'm just not into it. No. As a matter of fact, it took me a minute when I'm watching the car underwater at the beginning of the trailer because it's so not iconic for me that I couldn't remember what movie it was. Okay, I've seen this trailer before. It's the one with the guys in the water. It's like, oh, Doctor Strange. It just didn't do it for me. So. Just got to say that. But the 3D on the trailer rocked.
No, I still want to see Strange. Definitely want to see Strange.
So yet another big tragedy, although it's not as big as you would have expected it to as an inciting event. I think because Sokovia, whatever the fuck that country's name is, that was plenty big enough without needing.
I think it's Stankonia.
That was big enough. We didn't need another little tragedy. I think they just needed something to hang on Scarlet Witch so she'd have an opportunity to kind of go through, like, to have camaraderie with Cap and for them both to deal with their guilt over the consequences of trying to do good act. I want to take a moment here. I really enjoyed having, Scarlet Witch is saving Captain America. Things go awry, though, and some people die as a consequence. And Cap has to kind of talk Black Widow down from feeling, you know, like she shouldn't even be doing this anymore. And I enjoyed that the movie took the time to have that scene where they're kind of processing their guilt, and Cap's explaining that, you know, you can't save everybody and shit's going to happen with the snakes that we play at. One of the great things about this movie is it always takes the time to just stop for a minute and process something and give you that character moment because it's giving you tons of action. It's giving you tons of great special effects, but they don't sacrifice that the characterization. They don't sacrifice the needs of the story so that you feel the weight of everything that's happening. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad they established that very early on, too, because it's the movie starts with such a heavy action sequence, and it's prolonged too. It's a pretty good length of time, and I like how right afterwards, okay, now we're going to stop and we're going to collect ourselves and we're going to kind of deal with this shit. So that was great. But that leads into General Thunderbolt Ross, newly signed Secretary of State, who is going to basically bring the weight of the United Nations down on superheroes and force them to work under mandates of the United Nations and the U.S. What do we think about Thunderbolt Ross coming back?
I thought it was a nice way to hook all the movies together.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's a different Ross from the...
He was the same actor from the Marvel Studios Hulk movie.
That's right.
Which I still feel is pretty clearly a quasi-sequel to the Universal movie. So...
Okay. I do think
I know problem with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam Elliott was the better Thunderbolt Ross, though.
He has that cool voice.
But William Hurt was great. And I like that they haven't completely disowned the Hulk movie. They really haven't done much with that first Hulk movie. It feels like they just sort of want to sweep it under the rug since it wasn't the kind of success that Marvel Studios is used to.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was a solid movie, and I do like seeing them remember that happened. I do really wish, though, that they'd worked Adrian Pazdar's Major Glenn Talbot into Civil War. I was really hoping they'd for once tie into Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just for once. And I really love how Adrian Pazdar plays Talbot. And so connecting him and Ross again from the Hulk days would have been nice.
Yeah.
Even just like a little passing scene.
Well, didn't you say they're not going to connect the show and the movies?
Well, it seems like they're going to connect the shows to the movies, but not the movies to the shows.
Well, no, not just that. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. spent a lot of time recently building up the Inhumans.
Yeah, I've been watching it. It's fantastic.
And they've taken Inhuman movies off the schedule.
Yeah.
And you know that was the pet project of Ike Perlmutter. And Ike Perlmutter is now no longer the head of Marvel Studios, or no longer has oversight over Marvel Studios. He oversees television and he oversees comics, but Kevin Feige has his own fiefdom of Marvel Studios. And now there's that tendency where they're trying to get rid of all the stuff that was Perlmutter driven, which means disconnecting even more from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and not bringing in the Inhumans like they had been planning on doing. Because the Inhumans has always been Perlmutter's big directive, because he wants to replace the mutants in the Marvel Universe with the Inhumans.
Yeah.
Because he knows they're never going to get the mutants back from Fox. So, and if you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the show is a mutant show.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
But the big movie, the big quasi-X movie that they were going to make, they're not going to make anymore, or at least it's been pushed back.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a big thing. But that also means that a guy who would be an obvious fit for this movie, Talbot, doesn't get in. So,
yeah.
That was kind of a drag. But I do think that it's a good handling. I think that it's a good angle to play off of. It's a great conflict. Because, I mean, honestly, it's the same thing. I've talked about this before earlier with Paquita, was that I was never that into Iron Man. Iron Man was Mac's character, and Mac tried to get me into Iron Man. It didn't really take. And I first started to regard Iron Man seriously when I realized that he was a right-wing character. And there aren't a lot of clearly Republican right-wing characters in comics, especially ones as established as Iron Man. And yeah, there's a brief period where I think he was Secretary of State inside the Marvel Universe. And of course, he was the guy who was in the comic book Civil War who was pro-registration. And what made it interesting for me is those aren't my politics, but I appreciate their being represented in comics. It adds flavor, it adds contrast. But also, honestly, I agree with Tony Stark in the comics, and to a lesser degree in the movie, if you've got people with superpowers that are actively using them, there needs to be some kind of regulation. There needs to be some kind of an oversight. So it actually makes sense to me. They kind of demonize it over the course of the movie, just as they did to a lesser degree in the comic books. But it's just like if you're for something like gun registration, you'd have to be for superpowers registration as well, because you wouldn't want people with those levels of ability just running loose doing whatever they wanted to, especially if you didn't agree with their agendas.
True.
So this is probably one of the first parts of the movies I didn't particularly care for, and what, that was when Tony's confronted by the dead kid's mother.
Oh, and I really needed to restitch their name. Was it
she was the How to Get Away with Murder lady?
No, she's the one who's playing
she's
Amanda
in Suicide
Waller.
Squad.
Yeah, she's in Suicide Squad. No, this is an actress that's been around for years. She's a very accomplished actress. She's been in a lot of great movies, and I can't fucking remember her name.
Edit it in.
I'm totally going to edit this shit in.
Edit it in now.
For God's sake, it was Alfrey Woodard, Oscar-nominated actress, Golden Globe-winning actress, 18-time Emmy-nominated actress, and has won 4. She played the Condi Rice analog in the Black Panther animated series, and she might be the first actor to play multiple roles in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as she'll be playing Black Mariah in the Luke Cage television show. And also, I love that she's in one scene. She's there to really lay it on thick on Tony, and then they let her walk away, and that's all she is. She's the character who had a personal tragedy, and she shares it with Tony, and it galvanizes him. And I just respect that they didn't go back and do anything dumb with her.
Okay, so first, I should have. Okay, so I didn't preface this correctly. I kind of had a problem with it at first, but then when you realize that this is the culmination of all these other films, right? He's having the flashbacks from New York, then the panic attacks. He fucked up with Ultron. Ultron was totally his fault, and he knows that it was his fault. And then finally, he's confronted by this woman, and that's, like you said, it's what galvanizes him. So you just have to remember when things are happening in this movie that this isn't necessarily a movie on its own. They have been building up to this. So for a second, I was like, well, man, he sure just was like, oh, she handed me a photo, and now I want to do the registration act, the Stankonia registration act, or the Stankonia Accords. Hold up, slow up, stop, control, like Janet, planet, Stankonia, But then I was like, wait, no. They have been building up to this. This is he's been mentally struggling with this kind of stuff over the last couple of films. So I was okay with it after that. But anyway.
Mm-hmm. And we also see the part two where they pulled another Ant-Man. One of my favorite scenes in Ant-Man was when Michael Douglas, circa 1989, shows up to have it out with the current heads of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And we do the same thing with Tony Stark seeing his parents off before they die, and he's recreating it via hologram. How did y'all like that sequence?
Freaked me out.
Me too. I don't think it was as good.
I don't think it was as good as it was.
Robert Downey Jr. was a little rubbery.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with that because we know that it's artificial within the movie itself.
Right. So yeah, no, I was totally fine with that too.
But also my problem is he looked a little too much like Downey Jr. circa Weird Science in 86.
Yeah.
Whereas he should have looked like Air America Robert Downey Jr. by that point. I know what this guy looked like in 1991. So it's like I'm not reconciling that well. But also he did look a little rubbery. He had a little bit of a Final Fantasy fantasy, the spirits within kind of thing going on there.
Well, I just was wondering if they had cut that from other movies, or did they just completely create that as CG?
That was totally CG.
Mm-hmm. Was it?
Yeah.
Because it looked damn good.
Modeled after one of... But it wasn't as good as Ant-Man was. It just wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Douglas was... I mean, literally, he looked like it was Michael Douglas in 89.
Yeah.
I could not see any artifice there.
Yep. So. And it had its moments during that scene where I'm like, damn, that is really good. And then it would be like, no, that's definitely obviously CG. Not even that I know that...
I thought maybe they had like
when it faded into the wireframe. Oh, yeah. All right, cool. No, this totally is fine. I felt the same way you did.
And I like too, by having his parents in there, particularly Howard, is we were introduced to the 1940s Howard Stark in the first Captain America movie, and this may very well be the last movie that will feature the John Slattery Howard Stark. So I like that continuity. There's so much in previous movies that gets paid off in this specific movie, and I like how I feel like this is probably gonna be the last Howard Stark related movie. So that's just one bit of continuity. It feels like the Captain America movies are a trilogy. Mm-hmm. You know, even though you had a completely different director and a completely different feel for the first movie, there's so many themes carried over from both of the Captain America movies into this one, plus the Iron Man movies, plus the Avengers movies. It feels like this is the resolution of so many ongoing plots in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even Peggy Carter is a...
Which is the next one, as we find out that Peggy's passed away. And that gets me too. How did y'all feel about them killing off that character?
I guess we all kind of knew she going
back. Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I mean, he knew it was going to happen. She had all the time.
I didn't, I was like, oh, Peggy Carter died. No. But I felt bad for Cap. You could tell he was one of the pallbearers. And you could tell he was, Chris Evans is fucking awesome, dude. Yeah.
I wanted to see him cry man tears, though. He never gave us the man tears.
I was waiting, it was just crying, but
that was the last connection he had to his time. His
era. And then he has a great scene with Black Widow again where he was like, that was his last connection
to that era.
When he came out of the deep freeze, he thought he'd lost everybody, but the fact that she was still around was that connection. You know what I mean?
And I like too how she brings up, and you were there for her, and he's like, not really, because she forgets that I'm there when I'm still in the room. So he wasn't there for her. She didn't get the closure that he got by seeing her. But again, Peggy's introduced in the first Avenger. She is not a major player in the Winter Soldier, but obviously it's important to see where she ends up. You see her with Alzheimer's. You see how their relationship is just halted, where he's coming, he's days away from losing her in 1945, and then here she is, a 100-year-old woman with Alzheimer's. So it's got to be gut-wrenching for him. But what gets me is I watched the two seasons of Agent Carter, and as I've mentioned before, I really hated the first season. I thought it was just ham-fisted, just caricaturish feminism, and I hated that they took a great 50-minute short and they tried to turn that into an entire series without actually giving it enough meat on its bones to make that work, and having those horrible caricatures of chauvinistic men like stretching out over an entire series. But then the second season of Agent Carter was outstanding. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was funny because it came out at a time where everybody was trying to compare Supergirl to Jessica Jones, and these shows couldn't be any more different. You know, they're literally like on different ends of the spectrum, and it's just a matter of your personal preference which one you like. But honestly, Agent Carter comes right up through the middle, where she's light at times, she's dark at times. A lot of discussions about race and womanhood and all this kind of stuff. An incredible villain. I thought Whitney Frost is one of the best villains in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I personally preferred the second season of Agent Carter over both Jessica Jones and Supergirl, ultimately. So to see the potential of that show and to know that the writing sucked and they were never going to come back for a third season, and then boom, we're going to kill Peggy, by the way. It's just like, it was a bigger gut punch for me, because I realized that character's pretty much ending too.
Yeah,
we're done with this character now, and it brings that another sense of finality. You've closed that loop that was begun with Captain America, and you went through all these other series, and then now it's over with because she's gone. So I like that had an impact for me, because I watched. It isn't often that I watch all these Marvel shows and they pay off in really, you know, they pay off in small ways over the course of the show, but you don't watch a movie and it just like hits you. But the fact that I've seen those two seasons of Peggy Carter, it hit me more probably because of that.
I think that it did seem really abrupt.
Yeah.
It was really abrupt. Like, he gets a text message and then he has to like, all of a sudden, boom, he's in the funeral carrying the casket. And then, but they did take the minute though, like you said, even though they had to rush through that real quick, they did take the minute for him to talk it over with Natasha afterwards and stuff. Mm-hmm. And,
it showed too, I finally, when it broke down and bought the Winter Soldier Blu-ray, mm-hmm. and I was listening to the commentary track, my feeling was that Black Widow was strongly attracted to Captain America, and Cap, because because of who he was and because he hadn't let go of all the stuff with Peggy and everything else, that there wasn't going to ever be a relationship there. But I've had the feeling like Black Widow wanted that relationship. And when you're listening to the commentary track, the Russos explained that what it really was they were work spouses. He was her work husband. She was his work wife.
Yeah.
And so they had that intense bond, especially in the workplace. But at the same time, they're not going to go any further than that. It ends in the workplace. And I liked seeing that she was still his work wife in this movie, even though they're going through a separation. So they handled that well. And I like, too, that they have that continuity. After giving you the gut punch of Peggy being dead, they finally explain that Sharon Carter is related to her,
yeah,
that she kept it secret, and it gives you, like, it opens a new story through her.
Yep.
But I think another reason why it was important to kill Peggy in this one is you were talking about how Peggy was the last connection Steve had to his old world, except for Bucky.
Except for Winter Soldier.
And it explains why he's so intensely concerned about rescuing Bucky, despite all the horrible stuff he did as the Winter Soldier, toward the end of the movie, where they're just talking about going to a carnival together, and Bucky had blown $3 trying to win a prize for this one girl that they knew, and they're trying to remember their name, and you know, he was making fun of Steve because Steve had blown his money on hot dogs, and it's like, that's the kind of stuff we do. I especially was thinking of Fix It over here, and some of the silly ass shit that we did when him and his ex and I were hanging out a lot together, and it's just dumb stuff that we experienced, but you have that bonding over that dumb stuff because you have that shared experience that goes back for years, and I could totally feel that with Bucky and Steve. So literally, Bucky is the last vestige, and Bucky had all those experiences with him throughout his life.
That's true.
There's nobody else who had those same experiences. Everybody else is dead or dying, or they've had all these other life experiences that took them to different places that made them different people. Bucky's the only guy who, despite having some fucked up experiences, to some degree is still the same guy. He's still a contemporary. Steve's had experiences, Bucky's had experiences, but they're still roughly the same age. They have all that shared history, and yeah, if Bucky's gone, then Steve literally has lost everything. He's completely disconnected from his old life.
I didn't read Civil War, right? The comic?
Yeah, I did. You did. Didn't you fix it?
A lot of what I read, obviously Iron Man is a too big character, so it didn't matter. He can be the turncoat, right? And be the bad guy, right?
But again, I agreed with Tony. In Civil War.
Comic, yeah, but it sounds like, no, but like reading somewhere, he's like cloning Thor and fucking imprisoning people like a fucking asshole.
Which they reflected in the movie with all that futurist talk.
Right. But in this one, I felt like they did a better job of making you kind of see Tony's side of it, because he basically says, if we don't do it now, they're going to force us later. And I thought that was a fantastic line, because a lot of it is you get the whole, and this was the problem with Batman versus Superman, is how forced is the conflict? Like, you have to convince me that two friends, even though Batman and Superman, they weren't friends, you have to convince me that two friends are going to fucking fight this shit out. And I thought that they did a really good job of galvanizing both sides, right? Like, you used that word already once, right? I apologize. But you know what I mean? They did a good job of not making it seem so forced, because it is. It's like, yeah, right. You're telling me that they're going to sign this fucking thing, and then that's going to make Captain America fight Iron Man, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know what I mean? It's not just a prop thrown out to make people fight. I think they do a really good job of actually convincing you, like, damn, you know what? Maybe Tony Stark kind of has a point here. Maybe he should just sign this fucking thing. And like, because Tony even says later on, like, look, it can be revised. We can revise this thing. We just got to sign it now to get everybody to shut the hell up. And even after he had the run-in at where they were chasing down Winter Soldier, he was like, if you sign it now, we can eventually retroactively make all the shit you just did that was totally wrong. And the whole time in that scene, I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, Cap? We could retroactively make that okay because we caught Winter Soldier because of it. See? So just sign the fucking thing. And you know what I mean? And he almost had him convinced. But, and then on the other hand, you see Cap's side of it, that, like, look, what if, and he had his little rant where he was like, well, look, what if they want to send us somewhere we don't want to go? Or what if there's somewhere we want to go and they tell us we can't go? What then? You know what I mean? Do we just start breaking the law or what? You know what I mean? And so I thought they did a really good job of taking the time, breaking from the action, and explaining in more detail what the motivations are between both sides.
Well, their ideas were justified when you look at them. I mean, I was like you. I agreed with both of them. Like, sometimes I was like, I agreed with Iron Man because it made sense, and then sometimes I understood what Cap was trying to do. And that's what, of course, Superman and Batman lacked, was that understanding of the idealism of what they were going after.
Well, because, and I think a lot of it had to do because they were trying to cram it all into one movie, whereas some of this has been set up.
Yeah, it felt like that,
Age of Ultron was Tony trying to shortcut this shit. You know what I mean? He's trying to make it so that there doesn't have to be superheroes, right? Because he's going to create the Ultron initiative, and we don't have to do this anymore. There's going to be some finality to it. And now he's over that, because obviously he knows he has to keep fighting, but he's seeing the repercussions and being like, okay, needs to get organized now. This is the Wild West out here with a bunch of superpowered people. And I really liked Vision's.
I was going to say,
I loved Vision's line too, where he goes, well, I mean, you look at ever since Tony Stark, going back to Tony again, ever since he revealed himself to be Iron Man, not only are there more and more superheroes, there are more and more supervillains. So is it chicken and the egg? The causation.
Right.
Again, going back to why Tony is so stressed out about it, because you know Tony's thought of it. This is something that ever since, is he the reason this whole shit started to begin with, which I think was fantastic, because he's right. Is it bad guys are having to step their game up because the superheroes are getting more powerful, or are there more super powerful people coming out to fight supervillains?
Yeah.
You got to think of it. It's not so clear cut.
That's what's interesting too, is when you look at the battle lines of who's on whose side. Ant-Man is a guy who's aware that Hank Pym was running around doing superhero stuff back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever. Captain America was always around in the 40s. Bucky's been around for decades. They know that this stuff's been going on for years, but the public just didn't know about it. So they are going to have a different perspective than Tony, sure, who has only been introduced to this fantastic world in the last 8 years. So you had that as well.
All Tony really knows, he is the first super, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got to know from his... Well, you think he would know from his dad? I don't know, but
there's this huge gap between Captain America and Iron Man as far as he's concerned, though. He doesn't know that Ant-Man ever existed, for instance.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Well, I don't know if he ever talked to his father about Ant-Man existing. Probably not, right?
Yeah, right. I don't think it ever came up.
Right. Well, no, I
think all that stuff was still classified. I don't think that's something that he would be at liberty to discuss, right, because I think only S.H.I.E.L.D. knew that Ant-Man existed.
Sure. Now, I got one question, though. This is where I was a little confused. Whenever Winter Soldier cripples a car and he takes that case out of the back of the vehicle, was that super serum? The soldier serum?
Oh, the blue stuff?
Yeah.
I think that it's whatever they came up with in Hydra, Russia, to simulate the super soldier serum.
Okay, because I was wondering,
whatever turned Winter Soldier super.
But is Winter Soldier the same strength as Cap? Like,
I think he's stronger than Cap.
I think he is probably stronger than Cap. Well, I think that's what they were kind of showing you, is that they figured out ways of physically making people more powerful than Cap, but it also fucked their brains up. Everybody else who tried this had their brains fucked.
So you had to mind wipe and program him, basically, whereas Cap's just dope as hell.
What enhanced all his good naturedness.
Leads me to this. Captain America, in these movies, we can definitively say it, is superhuman in these movies.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah.
The
helicopter scene.
Ever since, remember I told you, that was my big problems with Age of Ultron, was that they hadn't really proven that he was superhuman.
They were definitely giving you the feeling. I mean, he's punching Ultron.
All of a sudden, he's duking it out and taking like laser blasts to the chest from Ultron in a fight. And I'm like, come on, dude. And then in this one, it's a whole other fucking level. So I honestly didn't really have a problem with it in this movie. Maybe until the end, but we'll talk about that later. But dude, Cap was fucking legit in this movie. And the helicopter scene was, lady in front of us was clapping. I don't know if you saw, the lady in front of us started clapping when he was doing, mostly because Chris Evans is hot as shit.
I say that as the straightest man possible, maybe. All I was thinking during that was that this is the moment where he gets to show off the muscle.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't make a ton of sense to me. I can understand helicopters aren't the most stable of contraptions. He is clearly, unquestionably, superhumanly strong, superhumanly durable.
Superhumanly hot.
But at the same time, yeah.
What?
But and hot, yeah.
What?
But yeah, those muscles are enviable, definitely. And that was his major instance of showing that off. Just like running around in the Under Armour shirts and the Winter Soldier was his opportunity to show his glorious rock solid teeth stuff.
Sorry.
You're in a daze there for a moment.
So dude, he's freaking ridiculous in this movie, taking all sorts of shots, and like, you know, it's just his power levels are off the fucking chart.
That is one of the things I like too, is because of how ripped he's gotten, how big he's gotten, but also because of his age. I used to have a problem with Johnny Storm playing Captain America, because he'd already been Johnny Storm.
Yeah. Don't even look like the same.
And they don't look like the same guy anymore.
No.
It's all the super serum?
The soldier serum?
Yeah. But also, his face is so much leaner, and he's got that, his nose is more prominent, and it's got that kind of hook to it. He looks like a totally different guy than who played Johnny Storm.
From all the copious amounts of human
super soldier serum?
Hormone he's taking to get a body like that.
Okay.
I think that might be actionable. There's no drug testing in acting. That's when they need to get fucking enormously rocked up, that's what they do.
Okay. I hope that's not actionable.
He's taking a lot.
Soldier serum? Well, I just finished watching Fantastic Four because it's on Netflix. And I for a few minutes there while I was watching, I was like, wait a minute, that's Cap on screen, because he plays it totally different. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I could see what you're talking about.
Completely. I mean, and it's great acting too.
Yeah, no, he's a great actor, dude. He pulls off Cap.
And in the Gary Cooper aspect that I heard discussed in the first movie, I really see it in the latter two movies. He is doing a Gary Cooper kind of a vibe, that laconic quality to him. And it's part of what I love about the movies is, like you said, they don't come right out and tell you what the movies are about. They don't tell you what the stuff means. They don't tell you the motivations. They show you.
Yeah.
That's good writing. That's good acting. So I just have a lot of respect for that. Whereas, again, I have not seen Dawn of Justice.
Will you see it? 6 weeks and going. Will you see it?
I'm trying to wait until it shows at the Dollar Show.
What dollar theater?
There's one out in Clear Lake.
You're gonna go all the way to fucking Clear Lake?
Yeah.
How much gas are you gonna spend?
It doesn't matter because the money I spend will not go into the pockets of Warner Brothers.
All right, when you go, I want to go with you because I want to see your reaction to
Okay, that'll be fine.
Can we all go?
Yeah.
By the time we all spend that money, it would be for you to buy one ticket.
But yeah, I will see it. But it seemed to me that Dawn of Justice spent a lot of time posturing about being about political stuff. But it was a bunch of noise and rhetoric.
I don't even want to talk about it.
No, don't get Max started.
Fired up about the bullshit,
yeah,
faux political, religious
9/11 imagery,
wannabe storylines in that fucking movie.
Yeah,
that was bludgeoning you over the head with.
One of the things I love about Civil War is obviously we're living in a very polarized time, and everybody thinks they're right, and everybody thinks the other guy is not only wrong but so fucking wrong. You're practically fucking evil. You're fucking stupid. There's something wrong with you.
There's no moderation.
And the fact is, both sides in most situations are right to some degree, or at least they have some points. And what I love about this movie is because the politics are so complex and because they do have real world parallels, the opportunity to see two heroes that most people have an enjoyment of take different sides, and you be able to see both of their sides. I think that that's a healthy thing for us to see in our superhero movies, because we need more of that in our real life. We need to emulate these guys, not into going into superhero wars with one another, but to recognize that we're not completely polar opposites, and I'm not completely right and you're not completely wrong, because we all have a point. We all have strong motivations. We all have a reason for believing what we believe, and we should probably try to work it out before things blow up. I just liked how that kind of thought was put into the story, and I like how it shows that there isn't just one right way to do anything. There's not one right position to take. So I just had to reflect on that.
Okay. So what do we think about Black Panther?
Well, fucking awesome, dude. I thought it was amazing.
I liked Black Panther. I thought Chadwick Boseman, I loved his accent. He did a great job of the accent.
That was my least favorite part of Chadwick Boseman.
You didn't like his accent?
I felt like it came and went.
I didn't get that.
I didn't feel like it was rock solid. No. I think he needs
and
to work
And the truth
on
is, I can forgive that, because I think they're going
to
draw heavily from the Christopher Priest run based on what we saw in the movie. And this is a guy who has been educated. I think he's Oxford educated. I think he spent time in the United States. This is a guy who was a global traveler, so I could see where his accent could potentially get muddy. And obviously, the actor isn't himself African, so the fact that he could do that well to begin with.
Well, I personally love the posturing.
Yeah, he did good physical presence.
Yeah, like you said, the Christopher Priest comics. Every time I would see him land or something, I remember seeing that panel somewhere where he landed on all fours and he had that kind of stock look to him. So
I thought
it was great.
Other than the accent, everything was phenomenal with the Black Panther. I thought he kicked somebody else in this movie that kicked so much ass, and I could see people were, when he first popped up on screen, people were visibly like, yes, like excited to see the Black Panther.
People were clapping over the movie.
Why does anybody have any reason to be excited about the Black Panther? There is no reason to be. He's not Spider-Man. Yeah. But especially by the end of the movie, people were totally on board how badass he was. Badass. Mm-hmm.
And I like how they didn't spell stuff out for you too. You see the vibranium having an effect on the Winter Soldier's arm, but they don't just explain that to you yet. You see that the bullets, you know, do not have an impact on T'Challa.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily know why. You haven't necessarily been informed of that, but you just see it demonstrated. And the fact that the other heroes are like, who the hell is this guy? They're not supposed to have a history with this guy. He's from this ultra secretive nation. He's got abilities that nobody has seen. They've got technology that you haven't seen before. So the other characters are reacting the same way you are. And unless you happen to watch one of the cartoons with Black Panther, or you saw that really bad BET show that they did with the barely animated imagery. Did y'all see the cartoon?
No. I never saw it, but I remember it.
Yeah. Great theme song, though. The general public doesn't know who the hell this guy is. So they made sure to give him a wonderful introduction without spoiling too much. Although the Black Panther is one of my issues with the movie, is that I'm concerned they took too much away from the character before he gets his own movie.
What do you mean?
I felt like they compromised his origin too much. They show too much of how he came to be. They tied his origins too much into Captain America's world instead of, for instance, they spent all that time building up Ulysses Klaue in Age of Ultron, who in the comics is the person who kills Black Panther's father, T'Chaka. Mm. And now I'm sure that Klaue is going to turn up in the Black Panther movie, but it doesn't mean anything because he's not the guy who killed T'Chaka anymore. And it's just Captain America villain instead, who's going to go on to be in Captain America and Avengers movies potentially.
Instead, it's weird because it's because of the stolen vibranium that they become a little more
involved with the rest of the world.
Proactive, and then that's the reason they're in. Was it Kenya or Nigeria?
Nigeria.
Nigeria, which is why the bomb blows up. So in a way, Ulysses Klaue is kind of
very tenuous.
But you see what I mean, though? Like, they make sure they say that, mm-hmm. that it was the stolen vibranium from Age of Ultron is the reason why they're going across the country. And then yeah, that leads us back to the terrorist bombing that kills T'Chaka.
Yeah.
But you're right. No, that should have been a chunk of his movie, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
The death of T'Chaka. Yeah.
Well, that, and you know there's not going to be resolution because the person who kills T'Chaka probably isn't going to ever see a final reckoning.
Right.
And in fact, if that character appears again, we'll get to it a little further on, but if that character appears again, which I suspect that he will, then it's on T'Chaka that this guy isn't dead in the snow.
Yeah.
So it causes some problems there, I thought. So I thought they gave a little too much away. On the other hand, I was so glad that I had the whole media blackout thing because here comes Martin Freeman's character and I'm crossing my fingers. I'm like, please be Henry Peter Gyrat. And then it's like Eric K. Ross. I'm like, that'll work. That's okay. I'm totally cool with that slight swerve still working in the same fashion. It's a little hard to see Ross played by anybody but Michael J. Fox. But I love that you've got that call back to the Priest books. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great character. I think that Martin Freeman can play that character a little differently and probably straddle the line between these two characters that would work very well in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I thought that chick from the Dora Milaje, the fact they actually show any of the Dora Milaje, but the fact that that chick is so fierce and so fucking hot.
Super intimidating, dude.
So intense, yeah. So I love...
towered over Black Widow. Yeah. It was just like, holy shit.
I dug that they showed obvious attraction between Black Widow and Black Panther, which makes sense to me. And of all the shitty suitors they've tried to set her up with or people have shipped her with, T'Challa would be pretty fucking awesome.
Hey, just by the way, people understand what the fuck Frank was talking about. Michael J. Fox. He was the photo reference for
the character of Ross's
character,
who was the main narrator of the Crystal Priest Black Panther series.
Obvious photo reference, Michael J. Fox.
Yes.
People are probably...
Well, not just that, he's literally...
People are hitting Michael J. Fox's IMDb right now, freaking out.
Yeah. It's not just that. Literally, he was based on the character from Spin City. You know, that Eric K. Ross is Michael J. Fox's character from that show. And he functioned in the same way.
If people don't remember, Spin City was a shitty sitcom in the early or late 1990, early 2000s. Right?
Yeah, it was not a shitty shitcom. It was quite good. Plus, Michael J. Fox was plowing through premium trim throughout that series. Just some glory. He introduced us to Carla Gugino, so right off the bat, it's like, thank you for that.
What did you think characters. About the love romance between the Vision and Scarlet Witch? Did it feel forced?
I liked the hints.
Well, it comes from the comics, obviously. I do think that they gave a decent basis for the mutual attraction between the two of them. At the same time, I remember how excited I was for the Vision appearing in Avengers, especially because he was going to be like my Martian Manhunter proxy in Major Cinematic Universe, and I've always liked the Vision in the comics. And what's funny is not only am I learning to really hate the Vision in the Cinematic Universe,
really?
But it's reminding me that the Vision was always kind of a dick like that. I think he's consistent with the way he was in the books.
No, he's just being the Vision.
He's just being the Vision.
Really, so it's very true Vision.
So it's reminding me, holy shit, yeah, the Vision is a total fucking dick. And it makes sense the way... Plus, it doesn't help that Martian Manhunter has actually been on the Supergirl show, and for the 30 seconds on every third episode that they show John Jones, he's fucking awesome. So that helps too. He looks so fucking cool. I wish to God they would make a movie about that John Jones. He looks fucking badass. The CGI for 30 seconds every third episode is fucking sweet.
No, I couldn't get over the Vision wearing a sweater.
Well, that was great. He did that in the comics.
Yeah, he did do that in the comics.
I never really read a lot of Avengers comics, but mm-hmm. seeing him in that was so funny. It was cute. He's running around in his little...
Well, you need to read the new Vision series, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because I want to read it.
The whole thing is it's showing him being domestic, and of course in the comics, they took him and the Scarlet Witch as far as you could possibly go, married with sorcery-empowered children, a whole fucking thing, and they're reflecting that in the new Vision series where he's trying to live a domestic life with his own synthetic family, but things go really fucking awry.
Don't spoil. I want to read. Is it on Marvel? Is any of it up on Marvel Unlimited?
I think it's starting to show up on Marvel Unlimited now, yeah. Okay.
I've been waiting for that to pop up.
It's going interesting places. A fellow named Tom King, if I remember correctly, and he's been doing a lot of stuff at DC. He's been doing the Omega Men series, which sells fucking nothing, like 8,000 copies. But but the people who read it think it's so good, they force DC to finish the story, and they're going to put it out of one big fat trade paperback, and it'll be like one of the only things I buy from DC. It's like that and the second volume of the Demon Collected series
good,
by Garth Ennis and John McCrae. Yeah.
I'm going to read your stuff.
Oh, shit. I was going to ask you to bring some stuff.
I've got a stack of stuff to bring. I just thought I forgot.
Miss Mack wants to, or Mrs. Mack wants to, she wants to start reading Walking Dead. So we need all your trades.
Okay, we can do that. I think it's worthwhile. I think she can enjoy it. I tried to get Paquita into it. Paquita will not read comic books, period.
Are you still collecting Walking Dead?
No, I've stopped at this point. I got up to.
I got the last three years. You stopped at 21.
Okay. Whichever was the first trade after the end of the conflict with Negan.
21.
Okay. And
yeah,
I don't talk about it because I still haven't fucking read it. I just let you loan it to you.
I'll give it back to you. I already read them, but I checked.
Well, the point is, I've had that book for over a year, and I haven't bothered to read it yet. So I assume I'm going to read it at some point, so I don't want anything spoiled. Well, but I loaned it to you because I knew I wasn't going to get to it anytime soon.
I have 22, 23, and 24 from the library.
I stopped reading the book for a reason. I don't enjoy it anymore.
Stopping point.
Yeah.
Megan.
Good.
Okay.
Because I did.
The Vision.
The one thing that got me with the Vision, especially when there's a scene that I don't want to get to just yet, where Tony and the Vision are looking through a window, and so you're seeing the backside of Vision for a long period of time, and the Vision's cape looks like 1970s curtains.
Yeah.
And
I need them
to stop that. Yeah.
It was distracting.
It was kind of interesting when they did it in Voltron. Yeah, I just
that whole scene,
I
don't even know what the fuck they were talking about, but I was staring at his cape the whole time. That's weird. I thought that I still think that his makeup work is unbelievably amazing.
Yeah. 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 He looks very cool. I like
he looks fucking synthetic as shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't look like he's wearing a bunch of like a prosthetic helmet full of makeup.
Yeah.
It looks like he's literally got plastic skin. It's unbelievable. I just stare at his face.
Yeah.
And his eyes. Mm-hmm. His contacts are amazing too.
But I am learning to hate the Vision though. Right. And it's a good hate. It's not like I don't want to see that guy anymore. I'm totally cool with seeing the Vision. It's just he's so powerful. He's so intimidating. And I don't enjoy where his mind takes him. I enjoy it in the story terms, but in terms of like
him being
my hero, totally not my hero.
Well, you're going to like him better when he turns into Adam Warlock in the Infinity movie.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah.
Well, I like the fact that he's in
a
gray area.
They're definitely fucking playing that out.
Well, I love the fact he's in a gray area. Like, he could be a villain at any time. He has the leanings for it to be a villain.
I mean, you say that, but they've not played any of that up at all.
But the way
he's
thinks.
Very intimidating,
yeah. But he's very indifferent.
This isn't an Avengers movie.
Okay, should be.
It's at least a third of an Avengers movie.
Yeah. I did love the fact that Wanda put him through the floor. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, we're starting to get kind of jump around a little too much. Though. Okay. We're kind of jumping around a little bit. Yeah, it was cool. Let's just go into that too. I still like Scarlet Witch. I enjoy the goofy accent.
She looks way hotter in this movie too.
No, she was really hot in Avengers.
No,
does she fly in the comics?
It's sort of kind. And not really.
Levitate
dishes. Okay, yeah. I was just curious. I'm not a big fan of the way she flies. Like,
no, I like that she flies in a different manner. It's just that
the
her powers.
I can't do the hand movements, dude.
I love the hand movements.
They don't match up to the CGI right. It looks weird.
No, I love the hand movements. My issue is that there's too much Jean Grey in how she does shit.
Oh, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever.
Whoa.
You totally stole my thunder there. She's totally Jean Grey.
Yeah. I never thought about that.
No, I thought this while we were watching the movie. Then I'm like, wow, she is totally Jean Grey. Unbelievably powerful. Basically, being able to do anything, she's the ultimate nullifier for the Avengers. Anytime they need to get out of any situation, it's going to be Scarlet Witch that does it, just like Jean Grey was for the fucking X.
Mm-hmm.
No, I thought that exact same thing.
I never thought about that.
And I liked
our cycles are so synced right now. On this movie.
I liked how in the comics the hex power was so vague, and it was a mutant power, but there was an element of mysticism to it. You didn't know exactly what Scarlet Witch could do, and what she could do varied because sometimes she didn't really have a great amount of power, or the hex power would actually blow up.
I remember reading stuff. She couldn't control it all the time.
Yeah, but in these movies, she's just Jean Grey. She just is telekinesis.
Yeah, yeah.
She gets to that place with the weird hand gestures and the funky CGI, but it's still Jean Grey. And she even has like reddish hair, so that's kind of an issue for me. But one of my problems with Avengers, and by problems I mean fetishes, is that I have to own it now. I threw shade at Elizabeth Olsen in part because I just don't like her sisters and they creep me out. And I never understood why people were attracted to her sisters, and she does kind of look like an alien. But the whole goth schoolgirl thing throughout Avengers Age of Ultron, all the times, it's funny because they made a big deal recently about how Joss Whedon, when he was trying to get Olsen to sign on, he said, look, you're going to Google Scarlet Witch and you're going to see her in these ridiculous costumes. I'm not going to sexualize your character. I'm not going to make you wear the skin tight one piece. Just don't worry story about it. So he turns her into a goth schoolgirl where she's got the short skirt, the thigh high, like leggings, this big gap of thigh where I'm thinking about nothing but Scarlet Witch pussy every time she's on screen in that fucking outfit. Plus she's got the plunging neckline when she's dressed in the Age of Ultron suit, and she's constantly like waving her arms around so her tits are hanging out. And it's like, she's such a sexualized character in Age of Ultron, and to a lesser degree in this movie, until she actually gets into the costume for the big Avengers battle, which she doesn't even keep the whole time, and she goes back to her other suit eventually. It's like, she's goth schoolgirl, and I can't get
past
that.
Dude, you read way too much into that.
No. He's right.
I mean, like, I know.
She totally sits around her room, and she got the dark eyeliner.
The black nails.
She's emo. I got that.
She cries, and it runs a little bit, and she listens to fucking The Cure, obviously.
I just didn't realize the whole sexual part.
Or would it be Death Cab? No. Oh, now I'm confused with what Death Cab.
She has bare naked thighs.
Really?
All the time, and it's hot.
I missed that completely.
I didn't think she was as hot in the first movie as I did in this one.
You need to watch Age of Ultron again, though.
I tried to get him to.
We tried to watch it last time we were at his house. I nearly pulled his TV. Oh, dude, it's so dumb. It's gotten worse. Yeah,
It doesn't hold up. I have yet to watch the entire movie from beginning to end, but I will watch pockets of it.
Yeah.
I do like scenes out of it. I haven't been able to commit to watching the whole thing.
I have to agree with Mac. I try to rewatch it, and yeah, it doesn't hold up as well.
There was some, I mean, I thought that they did some interesting stuff there. I gotta tell you too, Joss Whedon, there's elements of Joss Whedon that was pissing me off, and it pissed me off the most in Age of Ultron. Stuff that he felt that he needed to do. Like the whole killing people thing. You know, here's a big spoiler of this movie. Nobody fucking dies that matters in this movie, except King T'Chaka, whose whole point is to die, like Thomas
Peggy
Wayne.
Carter.
Huh?
Shout out to Peggy.
But you knew Peggy was gonna die too. That was a foregone conclusion. Bad stuff happens, important, impactful stuff happens, but you didn't actually have to kill anybody. And you didn't need to kill anybody in the first two Avengers movies, but they felt the need to because Joss Whedon always has to kill somebody. I felt it at the time. Phil Coulson.
Oh, that's right.
I caught a little bit of Thor earlier today while I was working, and I miss Phil Coulson in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'm sick to death of him in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think that he's played out. He's just everything that worked about Phil Coulson, they completely played out in that series, and I'm kind of tired of him now. But in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as the guy who's kind of a fan, but he's also an agent, and he's serious, and he's into his work and all that kind of stuff, that was a unique character, and I think it was a vital character in the Cinematic Universe. I miss that character in the movie. The guy on the TV show bores the shit out of me, and you just didn't need to kill him. That was unnecessary. Mm. The death of Quicksilver, I could see why you need to do that, partly because the X-Men franchise is using him, mm-hmm. and partly because it would have been a majorly different fight if Quicksilver was still around for the big Avengers clash. But at the same time, I like that character. I do think you could have done some interesting stuff with him. I do miss how he could play with his sister, because his sister...
Ooh, that did not...
Yeah, I know. Well, there's been talk in the comics for a long time, and there are some comics that make it very explicit, but I miss why Wanda having Pietro to bounce off of. I miss Clint having Pietro to bounce off of. I think that especially if they'd played him more like he was an X-Factor, where you had him have the increasing arrogance and the increasing irritation and frustration, that would be a much different character from the guy who's in the X-Men movies, who's basically Impulse from the DC Universe.
True. I could do that.
So Whedon's need to fucking kill somebody. This movie proves you don't have to kill somebody to still tell an important story that has a resonance and has lasting impact on the universe. So that's an instance where the Whedonisms, especially when I go back and revisit those movies, does kind of bother me.
Yeah. No, I'm down with that.
The airport scene alone blew me away. Like...
Yeah, I gotta say, when I was watching the movie the first time, and they got to the airport scene, which is a very long fight sequence mm-hmm. of heroes versus heroes, because I was so impatient to see the full movie as a whole, I was getting very frustrated with it the first time I saw it. And once I had seen the movie one time all the way through, and I could go back and not feel that pressure to know how it's all going to resolve, I loved the Marvel battle. I loved all the heroes fighting all the other heroes. I don't think that you could cut a minute out of that.
No.
I think you want to see all those different types of powers played off all those different types of ways, and I think there's going to be so much replay value to that scene, because there's so much, you cannot take it all in. There's just so much going on, and it's all freaking cool.
Mm-hmm.
So do we think that they're going to get Robert Downey Jr. to replace Sam Jackson as the new superhero stinger recruit guy?
That would be interesting, huh?
Because that, I mean, there was, Sam Jackson's not in this movie.
Yeah, that.
But Robert Downey Jr. plays Sam Jackson.
When he shows up at
Peter Parker's house.
One of the more refreshing things about this movie is that for once they let Nick Fury not be in it. And it's not that I don't enjoy the Nick Fury character. It's not that I don't enjoy Sam Jackson's portrayal. It's just that he's been in like every fucking movie. And I've gotten tired of that guy, and I'd like him to go away for a little while too.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to not have S.H.I.E.L.D. in this movie at all.
Yeah. And another one is Maria Hill. I got so tired of Maria Hill.
You know how I feel about it. We've talked about her a few times. I've got nothing to do with that chick. She didn't need to be around.
Yeah. But what was funny is that Sharon Carter is the replacement Maria Hill in these movies. And Sharon Carter doesn't get a lot of development in this movie. She gets to do the eulogy and she makes her connection to Peggy. But it seems to me like she's sort of like that video game character where she's like the whatever you need, she just shows up and gives it to you. Like when you beat a level and you get to the guy who tells you, oh yes, now you, here's your part of this armor or the special key that you need to carry on with your mission. She's like the save point in this movie because she always shows up.
I like that. Keep going.
She always shows up just in time to give the key information to the guys because of her CIA connections. Nobody ever questions her. She's never in Dutch, but she's always the one who keys you into the key information so that you don't miss it. Watch this part. Watch this part right here. Okay, then the heroes go off and they act on the information. And she's always there with their armor, with their... It got irritating. And it's not that I thought the actress was fine. I still don't see Sharon Carter in her because she's just too... And they had some nice action sequences. She just seemed a little soft for Sharon. And to me, Sharon is like a really intense Sarah Connor-ish type agent. And I know part of that is just how she was treated under Mark Waid and after him. So maybe we're going to see her progress to that state. But she still feels a little soft to me. And
here's another issue I have. Captain America's got too many fucking sidekicks in these movies, and they need to start paring them down immediately. So you know I don't like Falcon. Seriously, you could have had this whole movie without Falcon. The dude is just—he's not a very good actor.
He has a nice port upon voice. That's very fakey superhero voice.
I'm missing my superhero voice, Captain America. Mm-hmm. Right, but as soon as like Paul Rudd would get on the screen, and then you've got Chris Evans, and you've got Robert Downey Jr., and you've even got Chadwick Boseman, and you've got Scarlett Johansson, he's like the odd man out acting wise, especially when he's trying to converse with all of them. He's by far the most plasticky.
Yeah.
Like you said, I'm putting on my superhero voice because I'm in a superhero movie.
This is me reading my line. This is me reading my line.
As a superhero because I'm a superhero in a superhero movie. Mm-hmm. And it was like jarring to have that because, again, they're all on screen.
They're so much better at acting
than
he is.
And they'd go in and go, hey, Falcon, what's going on up there? And he'd be like, I'm looking at this thing and now I'm going to try and make a joke with that same smirk on my face. And which Scarlett Johansson does some of that too, and I've capped on her in Age of Ultron for that. She was a little better in this movie.
But Scarlett Johansson has gotten to be just playing a better actor over the course of these movies. When you look at Iron Man 2 to today, she's just better at this game.
Did she even talk in Iron Man 2? When you think back, I feel like she hardly ever said anything. You know what I mean? But again, so then you've got him as a sidekick, and then you've got Winter Soldier as a sidekick, and now you've got Sharon Carter in there as a sidekick, and I'm like, the VW Beetle can only fit so many people. Let's get rid of some of them. Yeah. So obviously, by the end of this movie, we do lose one. I'm not saying that he and Falcon don't get they have very good chemistry, but then you're also trying to build the buddy buddy chemistry with Winter Soldier, and now you're going to try and build the buddy buddy relationship with Sharon Carter. They were trying to juggle too many people in that little circle.
It's not that Jim Rhodes is that awesome, but he's had so many movies of just him and Tony that their relationship was very strong. It was like cinematically, even across two different actors, it still works very well. Where Cap's sidekicks have been spread so thin, there's just too many people competing for attention. And it feels like they're competing for attention.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fatiguing, and you don't necessarily latch on to any one of them because there's another one around the corner that you're going to have to deal with. But what I do have to say is I was impressed, again, with that initial action sequence, how much they were able to step up Falcon's game.
I agree.
I thought that the introduction of Red Wing was great. I thought that Red Wing was probably a better hero than Falcon himself is.
Yep.
But I liked how they were, this is, I think, straight out of Hawk World, honestly, using the shield, the wings as a shield, and making them more versatile and doing different things. I do also like that I was talking with Paquita how hand-to-hand Falcon just isn't anything to talk about. He's just not that big of a deal. But I don't think that anybody else can work that particular Falcon harness as well as he does. And he's got so many signature moves that he's worked out at this point with the harness that you can't just have another Falcon. I do think that if you're going to do the kind of stuff he's doing, he's the best guy to have doing that.
Yeah, and I thought all of his cool flips and shit. You can tell they made an effort to make him have his set of special moves that he did, and
he was killing those guys with guns, though, right?
I'm pretty sure he was killing those terrorists, though. He was shooting them. And also, it's funny, though, because all of his cool stuff is right there at the beginning, and then they like almost completely forget about the guy for most of the rest of the movie. He's a jobber for the entire rest of the movie after they're like make a big point of showing, look how cool the Falcon could be, and we've got some color in his suit now, he can do all this neat stuff, and we're too busy showing you Spider-Man now. So we're just not going to worry about this dude anymore.
Okay, I'm going to rant about it.
Okay, go for it.
Get Spider-Man the fuck out of my Marvel Cinematic Universe. I don't care. I don't want to watch an Avengers movie and have the fucking crowd erupt when Spider-Man comes on the fucking screen, dude. I haven't invested all these years of storytelling in Tony Stark and Captain America and Black Widow for you to interrupt my movie with 30 fucking minutes of Spider-Man's origin, man. I just don't... I understand they got their toy back and they want to put him on the screen, and I didn't think he looked particularly good in this movie.
I disagree.
There were a lot of people...
I thought he looked fantastic.
I thought he looked very good.
I thought the CGI looked different. He looked like he was a little bit faded compared to everybody. I don't know. I think he just was brighter colored.
He looked like a kid, man. Like, finally looked like this.
And I think he's... Although he's got this weird... I know you guys don't watch sports. He's got this weird resemblance to Johnny Manziel, and it freaks me out. I keep thinking it's Johnny Manziel, and it's really freaking me out. But I think that's great. He's got the Brooklyn accent, or Queens? Brooklyn?
Queens.
Yeah.
Queens accent.
I love the Brooklyn-Queens rivalry there.
That was all great. I just... The fact that he's in the movie bums me out. Because, A, it could have just made the movie that much shorter, because some people are complaining a little bit about the length of the movie.
Yeah, and that's bullshit. If that is probably the fastest 2.5 hours since Pulp Fiction.
No, it was. I mean, trust me, I stood through it and it did not feel like a long movie. I'm just saying you don't have to fill it with anything. I'm not saying, well, good thing they had Spider-Man. I'm just saying they could have just done without all that.
But it kind of worked, though, because I liked how without Hulk and Thor, getting Spider-Man in there helped to fill out Tony's team a little bit more. I think he needed Spider-Man, and I don't think it would have been as visually interesting without Spider-Man in the big action sequence, because you got too many similar guys. Tony and War Machine move too much alike. Their weapons work too much alike. Too many similar sound effects. Black Widow, as great as she is doing fighting sequences when she's fighting other Avengers, it's just not that great. That's why they have to have her fight Hawkeye, because she can't compete.
Poor fucking Hawkeye, dude.
Yeah, poor fucking Hawkeye. But she can't compete at that level. Spider-Man needed to be there because you needed somebody as powerful and as versatile in that fight sequence.
And he's great. He's hilarious. I love
that.
Jokes.
That I disagree with, actually.
No, okay.
You like his jokes?
He wasn't hilarious, but I like the, hey man, there's usually not this, you must be new at this, because there's not usually this much talking when you're fighting. Mm-hmm. Like, I liked the play back and forth. He wasn't some world beater or anything.
He's
the
a Spider-Man,
we had to do the Spider-Man. I was waiting for a Star Wars reference with the AT-AT where they were going around.
Were you ready for that?
I was waiting, not for a reference, I was waiting for them to beat him like that by wrapping him up with the webs, right?
Classic comics.
And then he flat out went to the, hey man, I saw this movie a long time ago called Empire. That really old movie, Empire Strikes Back. He was fine. I had no problem with him. I know we're gonna Spider-Man shoved down our throats, and I don't care about Spider-Man.
I'm not sure actually how that's gonna work. Here's the thing, Paquita. One of her big gripes about the Marvel movies is they tried too hard to push in jokes. You know, just like trying too hard to get too many jokes into there.
The Joss Whedon movies,
okay,
a little one-liners.
And Shane Black,
and Ant-Man, and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Disagree with those two, but go ahead.
Okay, so she gets tired of all the characters trying too hard to be funny. And one of the things I helped to sell her on this movie was that there's comedy in the movie, but it's much more organic. The right people are making the right kinds of jokes. And where, for me, Spider-Man, when he was talking, I didn't find hardly anything he said funny. I didn't see the humor in it. What Paquita forgave was that he's a kid, and he's awkward, and he's running off the mouth, and she saw that as part of his characterization. So she didn't see all that stuff as forced jokes. She just saw that as the character. And I agree with that. I totally forgive him that. But at the same time, I didn't find him funny. I didn't laugh at pretty much. But what was great is that people who I haven't found especially funny, like Ant-Man was so much funnier in this movie than he was in his own movie. He works so much better within the context of all the other Marvel heroes, and I thought they mined him for some great laughs. So I actually ended up liking Ant-Man better through comparison to guys like Spider-Man.
Well, that's because you didn't like Ant-Man. Most people liked Ant-Man.
I liked Ant-Man.
So I disagree. I thought he was funny in the movie just like he was funny in Ant-Man. Mm-hmm.
What I want to say too about Spider-Man, and also apparently people were trying to slag on the older Spider-Man movies, like they never were able to show the cool action of Spider-Man as well in those old movies, and that's fucking bullshit. They had some excellent action sequences in the Spider-Man movies. Spider-Man 2 is still one of the best superhero movies ever made, and I don't even particularly like Spider-Man, but I gotta give credit where credit's due.
Everybody's saying this is the best Spider-Man ever to appear on film ever, and this is Spider-Man, and I was like, did you really see enough to make that kind of a...
My feeling is that in terms of rendition on the screen, probably the Tobey Maguire, Sam Raimi Spider-Man was the best in terms of how Spider-Man looked, like the CGI. In terms of the actor inside the costume, I still like Andrew Garfield
best. I was going to say, I prefer that. Spider-Man.
And it's not that his character was that close to the comic book Spider-Man. I just thought Andrew Garfield had the right right attitude.
Well, he had the right body shape too.
And also his when he did do one-liners, I thought he was funnier than any of the other Spider-Men. Like I especially loved in Amazing Spider-Man where he's jacking with the guy with the knife, like oh my weakness, and that kind of attitude. I liked it. I thought that was funny. The guy they've gotten this one, Tom Holland, I like that they do give him the accent. I like that they're making sure that you know that he's a New Yorker. But at the same time, he just seems. I look at him and he's just generic Kit. I don't know if it's just because I'm old, but he just looks like generic white Kit. I don't see a character there yet.
Looks like Johnny Manziel.
Okay. And the other thing is, as much as I love Marissa Tomei, fucking Aunt May, no. I have this gut level reaction where it's like what DC's been doing with the New 52, where suddenly everybody's got to be hot.
Yeah.
And it's like it was already a bit of an issue for me for Sally Field to still have brown hair and be Aunt May, but at least she's age appropriate. She's just really well maintained for somebody in her 60s. But Marissa Tomei didn't start doing nude scenes until she was like in her late 30s, early 40s. Marissa Tomei is still extremely hot.
Yes.
Aunt May should not be fucking hot.
But that was kind of cute where Tony was hitting on her a little bit.
It's cute, but it's not Aunt May. If your whole thing is trying to be
It was weird.
Yeah.
With him saying, oh, come on, May. I mean, like it was.
That's not Aunt May. It's weird. That's MILF May.
I'm willing to give it a shot. It's fine.
I'll see the movie.
I enjoyed it.
But I do love that this is the first Spider-Man movie that looks like the John Romita Spider-Man. I grew up reading like the digest that had the John Romita art, and there were still like issues of those that run in my house. And then when John Romita Jr. was doing Spider-Man, he looked a lot more like his dad when he first started doing it. So for me, that's kind of, and Al Milgram aped the John Romita Spider-Man. For me, that's my Spider-Man. So I do have that little ping of I'm not the Ditko Spider-Man guy. That's not the Spider-Man I grew up with. I grew up with Romita, and he looks like the Romita Spider-Man. Like yeah.
Stay out of my movies, man. I'm telling you, it's going to fuck up the whole slate, too, because then they're going to move all these Marvel movies around to make sure they slot the Spider-Man stuff in. It's going to
That does suck, but I don't think you're going to see as much Spider-Man in the other movies as people think.
Were you surprised? This is probably a tangent. Were you surprised they didn't give any Doctor Strange hint in this movie?
I'm glad they didn't.
Like, they didn't even, like, bring him up? Like, they didn't even say...
They didn't need to.
Like, when they were arguing about players they should try and get, they didn't even bring up... You know what I mean?
Like I said, this movie has such a sense of closure.
I said, were you surprised they didn't do it? I didn't say, did you want them to or not want them to?
No, I really wasn't surprised, though. I really felt like this movie was about closing off a hunk of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like ending all these storylines. It was like the resolution. Again, I see where Age of Ultron was partially ruined by the need to make this movie after it, because so much of that movie was a setup for this movie that I feel like Doctor Strange, the intention with Doctor Strange is for it to be its own thing, very separate, so you can kind of have another entry level movie where you're not having to deal with a bunch of continuity. Well, see, I'm not sure what they're going to do with Spider-Man either, because I do think that they're going to have a lot more Marvel Universe into the Spider-Man movies than Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe. Maybe Infinity War, but I don't know how much they're going to use him, because they're still going to be time sharing him with Sony, and Sony's going to want to do some stuff with this guy too. I did hate that the stinger at the end of the movie was fucking Spider-Man, and lame Spider-Man to boot.
Huh? See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Okay.
Why?
Even the stinger of the fucking Captain America movie was Spider-Man, dude. This is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about.
And just weak-ass Spider-Man. The spider signal, really?
The spiders, right?
You know. And the spider signal was always a weak version of the bat signal anyway.
Yeah,
you know?
I was surprised they went that way with it.
Yeah. Okay, so we're late enough in talking about this now. We can kind of start working our way towards some of the endgame stuff. I loved that Black Widow was the double agent. I loved that after having been Cap's work wife all that time, after all the distrust between those two characters that still persisted throughout Winter Soldier, that she picked another side after all this time building her up as Tony's backer, for her to flip sides when she realized that there wasn't any better way of doing that. So I totally dug that.
This is one of the things that bothered me in the movie, was that the timing was not right at the end of this movie. So War Machine gets shot down by Vision, right? Which is a little foreshadowing that Vision's a little fucked up.
Well, I mean, it's not necessarily, because he didn't know that Falcon was going to be able to respond the way he did.
Well, I think that I think it goes back to what he was talking about with Scarlet Witch, though, about using the gym, that he doesn't know how it works sometimes, and it frightens him a little bit. I think that after he fell, I think that was the look we had on Vision's face, was, fuck, I don't know what I'm doing with this thing totally. And I might have accidentally killed somebody, you know what I mean? So, but they get in the Quinjet and leave. Tony rescues War Machine, takes him back. They show Rhodey in the CAT scan. They have the talk with Black Widow and Tony. And then Tony flies out to the jail in the helicopter, leaves the jail in the helicopter to get in his armor, and he ends up in Siberia 2 minutes after Winter Soldier and Captain America arrived.
Yeah.
Seriously, the timeline is seriously fucked up there.
Well, and also in the big fight, what happens? Vision brings down that barricade. Scarlet Witch is creating a path for Cap and Bucky to get through. And then the Vision disappears for 5 minutes while Cap and Black Widow and Bucky are all talking about what they're going to do. And then Black Widow alone is able to stop Black Panther.
Yeah, with the stupid little...
With the zappy things.
He's been shrugging shit like that off the whole movie. Right. With the little electrical zaps.
Yeah, and again...
But I think she tried... Didn't she try to use that on Winter Soldier at some point earlier? Or she tried to use... Or was it on Crossbones earlier? She tried using it on somebody earlier, and it was just totally ineffective.
Well, with Crossbones, I think it's because it was affecting nerves, and I think his nerves had been damaged. I think that was the point of that.
Yeah, probably.
But the thing is, she wasn't zapping anybody during the big fight. She zaps Ant-Man, and he's barely out of the fight for any length of time. So how is Black Panther... Because of convenience of storytelling.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was so fucking weird how Tony leaves Black Widow with Rhodey, and then it's like, then they cut over to Cap and Bucky, and then they cut back, and all these guys are already in prison, and it's like, isn't that where you were, what was going on there?
All that.
There's either a deleted scene or like a rewrite that didn't get quite taken care of correctly.
I was like, there has to be a scene where they take that Quinjet and go land somewhere and devise a plan, and then they fly to Siberia, which is what's taking up the time. Because I was like, it'd be one thing if it was just too many events. Like I said, the CAT scan, finding out, oh, he may be paralyzed, and then I'm going to go to this prison, and then I have all these... It just was too much going on and on and on and on and on.
But the movie would have probably felt too long if they had played that out correct, but the timeline is fucked.
I just felt they could have done one little copy and paste, and it probably would have worked a little bit better. But
I do think they probably took the raft too far, too, because they went too deep into demonizing Tony with that. And it's like, you guys got locked up here 5 minutes ago. You guys haven't even been degloused yet. You know, and they're like... They look like they've been in internment for months.
Right.
And it's like, didn't this just happen? So I think they just were trying a little too hard to make Tony look bad and to flip Tony on this argument. So that was a bit of an issue.
Yeah, and at first I was kind of like, the prison kind of comes out of nowhere. Like, where the hell did they build this giant prison? But again, they're kind of showing that the government has had this sort of...
Been working on these contingencies.
They've been doing this shit for a long time, but there could have been a little explanation there. They could have dropped a little sentence in earlier, which they probably did, and they had to cut it, whatever.
It might well have been, yeah. It's already a long ass
movie. There were some continuity skips there that I thought that I capped on Batman vs. Superman for some of that stupid shit, so I got to cap on this movie too, that you had 2.5 hours, you could have cleaned that up a little bit to make a little more sense.
Yeah, but at the same time, the movie is so fucking stuffed, and so much of the movie is structured so well that I'm willing to overlook that, but it is rather glaring. Mm-hmm. Especially, I didn't feel it as much the first time. The second time it was like, wow, what the fuck happened there? That was a mess. So let's talk about the villain. In a movie this packed, it's hard to squeeze a villain in there, and they felt the need to squeeze Zemo in there, who is like my favorite Captain America villain.
Wasted.
And
no, but I felt he was justified.
Well, my issue is,
why call him fucking Zemo?
Why isn't that Dr. Faustus?
I mean, you could have called him anything.
But no, I mean, literally, Dr. Faustus is a psychiatrist. He is a guy who programs people, do his bidding. The Zemo in this movie doesn't, for the most part, have a major physical presence. It's nothing that Dr. Faustus couldn't have replicated. Instead of having Zemo beat up the communist with the book that tells you how to program the Winter Soldier, Dr. Faustus could have just zapped him with a taser or something, and it didn't have to be so involved. So I just wish they'd let this be Dr. Faustus' movie, because this is a villain that you kind of need to throw away. I think as much as I liked how you have the final resolution between Black Panther and the villain who's responsible for his father's death, as good as that speaks to that character, if it were Dr. Faustus getting put away, I wouldn't have to worry about Faustus coming back again. He could just get locked up and you wouldn't have to deal with him again. Zemo, if they don't kill Zemo, he's going to come back at some point. And Zemo is a very different character from this dude that's in this movie. So it bothers me that they wasted Zemo.
Super, super fucking different, but also kind of a lot like Red Skull.
Yeah. I do think that in the screen time the character has, he's a good villain. I think he shows great agency. He's a guy who knows how to fuck with people, and he's got really great plans. He's obviously a very Machiavellian schemer. Again, people have compared the Winter Soldier to the Dark Knight, and in this instance, I think there's a closer parallel, because the really cool schemes that the Joker comes up with in the Dark Knight is closer to the kind of shit Zemo's pulling in this movie. But I just wish it had been Dr. Faustus instead of Zemo, because I think Zemo needs his own movie where you can really focus on him. And I do think that it's going to cause problems down the line, because it's going to make people look bad when Zemo comes back and kicks ass.
You've lost Strucker now. Strucker was a throwaway.
Yeah.
You've lost Zemo. Just total throwaway.
Yeah.
It's like Mandarin. Like, you lost the Mandarin. Like, why did you have to call that?
Well, I think that they can still fix the Mandarin, though. I think that they're not going to fix the Mandarin
because he's a gigantic Asian stereotype. Because they're not going to make any more Iron Man until they reboot. Well, I will say that watching Rhodey and Tony together in this movie made me fucking hate Iron Man 3 even more and wish we would have got a real third Iron Man movie, not Kiss Kiss Bang Bang
Lethal Weapon.
Alternate, right.
Lethal Weapon 5.
Alternate reality. I it pissed me off because Robert Downey Jr. still got it. He's still got it. There's still life in this character. There's still that. Whenever he comes on the screen, you're like, hell yes, this is Tony Stark. This is fucking awesome. We love this guy. And it's just, we're not going to
And
one.
Robert Downey Jr. is still making sick fucking money off the Avengers. He made sick money off of Civil War. Nobody else in that cast is going to make anywhere near what he's making for being in that movie. But I think that Iron Man has sort of become a slave to the greater Marvel architecture. They need Tony to be in certain places for these movies to work, and they've had to sacrifice the Iron Man movies. Because if it was just a budgetary issue, they wouldn't keep throwing all this money at Robert Downey Jr. or they'd find some other kind of proxy. They specifically want Iron Man to be doing this stuff. And honestly, I think a lot of it was building towards Civil War. I actually think that maybe Tony will get to be his own character again now that they've got Civil War out of the way. Because they've told like his big major uber arc already. Because again, this is the end of things.
But I just feel like, man, I would like to see a movie about him and Pepper breaking up and you know what I mean? And Rhodey is paralyzed and him working with Rhodey to get through that. And then like I feel like I want to see another movie with these characters.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I think the problem with Iron Man 3 is it wrapped up Iron Man's story in a neat little package. And the good thing about the movies that have come out since that have featured Iron Man is they've unraveled that perfect ending for the character. And if they do make another Iron Man movie, they fucked up his life enough now to where it could be back to being interesting again. Plus, I'm not entirely opposed to seeing Tony Stark screwing around a little bit more. I kind of miss Playboy Tony.
Yeah.
As much as I like Pepper Potts, and I just, the relationship got stale kind of quickly though at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and again, we've still got his alcoholism story arc that has never been told.
Yeah.
Which is, should have been fucking told over some goddamn extremist storyline. Oh my God.
Three.
Oh, my blood pressure's all up.
But the good thing is, I do think that they're getting to a place where they could tell that story and it being more realistic. Because if you look at where he was at when they were playing with the alcoholism in Iron Man 2, you don't want to see that Iron Man as a drunk movie.
But the extremist storyline, they were having him have the nervous breakdown, that could have easily been another track into the alcoholism. And they totally blew that. And I don't think you're going to get another Iron Man movie out of Robert Downey Jr. I don't think he wants to do it. I think he'd gladly take the money to take to become the Nick Fury to just pop in other people's movies and say, hey, Avengers Initiative, blah, 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 I saw you on YouTube.
And well, they've already talked about he's going to be in Spider-Man Homecoming.
That's what I'm saying.
He's going to be this mentor character and shit. So.
Blah, 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 blah. I want my Iron Man 4, damn it.
So one of the things that's wonderful about this movie is it leads you down this path and you think you know where it's going, and then you get to Siberia and shit gets real, you know, and you're not necessarily expecting them to go to the places where they go in the ending of the movie. And I loved how, again, one of my problems with Age of Ultron was you see the trailers, you've seen the movie. Hmm. There isn't enough new material in the movie itself, where this movie recontextualizes shit you see in the trailers and you don't even know what the fuck you're seeing in the trailer.
Clue. What the movie's about.
And when you change the context, all of a sudden, it's a completely different movie for you. So I loved that they did that. Now, you told me in the theater that you did not in any way see the what was coming with the death of Tony Stark's parents.
No. I had no fucking clue that Zemo's master plan... I totally bought in that Zemo's master plan was to get... I guess that was going to end up being the Serpent Society. Maybe that was the joke they were making at the preview where they said it was going to be the Serpent Society and they turned to Civil War. That this was going to be the Serpent Society of all these metahumans that he was going to break out and they're going to have to fight a whole. And I was going to see this
the Winter Soldier out
of Cap, Iron Man, and Winter Soldier. They're going to
versus the extremist soldiers in Iron Man 3.
Oh God! So, and they're going to overcome. They're going to see Bucky's actually a good guy. He's not a bad guy. He's, you know what I mean. That was going to be the result. They're going to defeat Zemo, and we're going to find out he was the terrorizer the whole time that framed Bucky. Oh, this is going to be good, right? And then you get into the fucking home dude who's got himself locked in that room with a laptop open, or was it a TV or whatever?
Yeah, they don't make it clear.
The surveillance video from earlier in the movie where they show what is it?
The Winter Soldier caused the car to crash, goes in the trunk.
He kept asking, tell me about 1991 or whatever, case file 1745 from 1991 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And we finally get to see that was earlier in the movie where they show Winter Soldier getting deprogrammed. And they showed you this earlier in the movie. He gets deprogrammed. They needed him to go take out a freaking car and get the payload that was in it. And that's what he does. Takes out a car, gets a payload. You find out, well, the payload was to create these other metahumans, right? Mm-hmm. And you think that's kind of of where it ends.
Yeah.
Until you realize.
An excellent MacGuffin.
Until you fucking realize that that car, and then they even showed you in the computer generated scene at MIT, wherever the fuck Tony Stark was, where he was saying goodbye to his parents, and he says they get in the car, but we know what happens next. They never make it to where they're supposed to go. It was right there in your fucking face. Fucking Winter Soldier was the one that terminated his parents, and it was Howard Stark that had the fucking super soldier serum or whatever that was, the bootleg serum, in his trunk, and that's how they fucking died, and he covered up the... I had no fucking clue that's where it was going to go. I just knew that I had seen the fight scene in the trailer where they're all fighting at that compound. So I knew they couldn't be buddy-buddy, but you kind of forget about it, kind of getting wrapped into that. Like, I know they're going to fight again at some point. How are we getting back there? And when they started playing, I had no fucking clue that that was going to be Winter Soldier killed Tony Stark's parents.
With extreme prejudice. It's not just
brutal.
That he kills
violent,
them, it's the
murder.
Way he kills them.
Oh my gosh, dude. And the look on his face and the fact that... And then you find out Steve knew, and it
again it totally fucks with your loyalty.
Yeah, and it so then,
Steve fucking knew this whole time and didn't fucking say.
And I'm telling you, man, throughout this whole movie, more than anybody, Steve is the one doing a bunch of shit in this movie where I'm like, dude, this is kind of fucked up. When he's just brutalizing those German soldiers, the Secret Service,
yeah,
coming.
That, but that was some fucking cool the raid level action.
Oh
sequence
my god,
too.
The action sequence fantastic, and you know, like Winter Soldier's getting ready to kill dudes, and Cap's like, oh, don't throw him overboard, I gotta save him. But they're beating the fuck out of those dudes.
Yeah.
And
Cap
and
his horse kicks, man.
Man, Cap is just beating the shit out of these cops. You know what I mean? So, and then when he steals that dude's Audi in the tunnel, I'm just like, man, Cap's doing a lot of stuff here. All for Bucky. Bucky's kind of a piece of shit. Like, I know he was brainwashed, and that's what Cap understands. That this is his buddy who's been brainwashed, mm-hmm. and he shouldn't be responsible for being brainwashed, right? Because he was literally brainwashed. The dictionary definition of brainwashed is what happened to him. So he can't truly be responsible for his actions. But man, dude, Cap's causing a lot of damage and hurting a lot of fucking innocent people to save his fucking buddy.
Yeah.
And I don't know, some parts of the movie kind of bug me, because, dude, Cap's kind of a bad dude. And again, I feel like a lot of Cap's motivations for not signing the whole
accord.
Stankonia Accord. Was because he was just trying to save Bucky. And I'm like, dude, you're tearing the Avengers apart. You're getting all your friends imprisoned. They're fighting. And I feel like I just feel like all of it was because of Bucky. And I just kept questioning, like, the whole time, is Bucky really worth all this shit? And I think that was, you're supposed to be like that.
Yeah.
But
Bucky's,
you know,
like that.
I know. Bucky even says, like, am I really worth all this? You know? I don't know. Kind of bothered me throughout the movie. Cap's kind of an asshole. Cap's kind of a dick.
Which is funny because it was a reversal of the comics where I believe in what Tony's saying, but he does all this fucked up stuff in pursuit of his ends, where they flip it. You know, for me, honestly, I was 100% Team Cap. And I just said I'm not necessarily opposed to the superhero registration. I understand why they were doing that. But Cap presents a good case within the context of the cinematic universe that has been set up. You know, the Avengers don't need that kind of regulation. And I understand why Cap is so motivated by that, because I could see, again, they did a good job of showing why Cap needs Bucky. He's the last. He is the last of his people. You know, from his generation, from how he grew up.
Hey,
that figure means so much to
him.
Let
it go, dude. Let it go, because you're beating the shit and probably paralyzing and giving concussions to all these people because of it.
But meanwhile, Paquita watches the movie, and to her, Cap's the villain. She's 100% Iron Man all the way through the movie. So
Cap was kind of the villain in a lot of this. I thought he was. I thought he was very much the villain in a lot of this movie.
And I think that, again, they did a great job. Both guys are right. Both guys. Yep. Are wrong, and there's a lot of people caught in the middle of all that stuff.
Dude, God, when he again, Bucky didn't murder his parents. He was brainwashed and programmed by these bad dudes in Russia to do it. I understand,
but he murdered the fuck out of his parents.
Dude, he murdered the fuck out of him, dude.
And he's still going to be a problem, regardless of anything else. And he knows it. Everybody knows it. So it's just a fucked up situation.
Yeah. So anyway, I saw none of that coming. I was like jaw on the floor, like, well, God, Tony's got to kill this guy now. Like, I don't know, how do you move on from this? And then that got to the scene where you have to go, Iron Man could totally waste both of these dudes at any point in time in this movie. But I will say, Iron Man is kind of powered down in these movies, and Cap is very much powered up in these movies.
Exactly.
But, I mean, like, even Age of Ultron, Iron Man was, like, wasting those Ultron bots, you know, so...
Not to the same degree that Hulk and Vision were, though.
I don't know. When they're at the shipbreaking yard in India or wherever, he wastes the main Ultron in that one pretty awesomely.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I do agree, because Cap is so much more powerful in the movies than he is in the comics, and Iron Man is so much more vulnerable.
You just have to
and they've shown that with stuff like Whiplash and such, too, where his armor does have a lot of chinks in it in the movies that they don't have in the comics. In the comics, that's not a fight. In the comics, Bucky and Cap versus Iron Man,
he would have just
no fucking way.
Although,
and there was an awful lot of laser blasts where it's like, shouldn't that have done the job? Shouldn't that have finished that off?
But Cap takes laser blasts all the time in these movies, so it's like, okay. But then I was like, okay, when he finally just gets fed up and just trashes Winter Soldier's arm off, I'm like, okay, this is the power he's got. He's had enough.
Well, see, I was under the impression that what that actually was a burst of energy after Winter Soldier had started cracking the arc react. I thought that was like, I thought that there wasn't Iron Man blasting him. I thought it was an explosion of him fucking with the arc react.
I'll go see. Maybe I have to look again a little closer next time then. But it looked to me, I thought that he just lasered his arm off. But I guess it could have been an arc reactor. Because he was
cracking. Yeah, because why wouldn't you have blown it off sooner? You know, yeah.
Okay. Well, then, anyway. So then Cap beats Iron Man. Yeah. Bunch of bullshit.
Yep. I was going to mention, too, how Paquita gets the Lego magazine. And it was spoiled for me that Ant-Man was going to become Giant Man. But so much shit was going on over the course of this movie that by the time they got to that point, I'd forgotten about it. And so I was like, oh, yeah! So I got excited about it all over again.
I hated that helmet. Why'd they change his helmet?
It was okay. I think that Ant-Man and the Wasp, you might be seeing a whole other costume anyway. They always make superficial changes.
They gotta keep changing
because they have to get a new set of action figures for every movie. So, but it's nice too, because we all end up with our favorites. I mean, as much as I love classic Captain America, as far as movies go, my favorite is still his S.H.I.E.L.D. outfit, the black and silver one. I just think that looked the best on screen. But I've liked a number of his suits. I've not liked a number of his suits. Iron Man the same way. So I don't mind. It just means that everybody gets a chance to get a new threads every few movies. I do not care for Black Widow when she does like energy baton stuff, though, especially because in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I feel like Ant-Man's, the definitive part of Ant-Man's costume is his helmet.
Yeah.
Like that's,
and he should look
that's
Ant-like.
Ant-Man. The rest of his costume is just red.
Yeah.
But the helmet is totally, so I feel like they should do fuck around with his boots or some shit, but leave
I wonder
helmet.
If maybe they jacked with it because of the Giant Man aspect. They wanted it to look good when he was Giant Man and not look like a giant Ant-Man.
I don't know.
But so, what I was going to say is I was surprised that the end of the movie hinged on the death of Howard and Maria Stark. I saw that in The Winter Soldier. Like when they showed the big information dump with Hydra, I immediately made the connection between Howard Stark being assassinated and The Winter Soldier. And ever since that movie, I've been waiting for them to make that connection.
You've been waiting for it? Okay.
Yeah, so it's not from the comics or anything, I don't think. I don't remember. But yeah, I've been waiting for that connection to be made. So I wasn't surprised because I expected at some point they would do it. It's just they did it at the most perfect point for this movie to work.
It just seems weird that was Zemo's
it's such a personal
whole
thing to hinge everything on. Zemo's, but he was right. Is there anything in Iron Man's character or Captain America's character that would make you think things would turn out differently when that came to light? I think it's a brilliant psychoanalysis of those two characters. I absolutely see both those guys reacting exactly the way that they did.
I know. I couldn't believe they got me.
Yeah.
These superhero movies usually
telegraph
play their
themselves
hand a
too
little,
much. Yeah.
I was like, shit, you go back and they showed the original video, and then that when the flashback scene at MIT, you know, like I said earlier, was his parents leaving to get in the car and you know, I'm like, oh my god,
this was
fucking awesome. That twist was so great, fucked up but great. And yeah. I just kind of helped seal the deal that this was a very, very good movie.
Yeah,
we're at the end, right?
Yeah. You want to talk about Wakanda?
Well, no, I was gonna ask, was when Captain America walks up to Falcon in the cage, is he dressed as Nomad?
No, he wasn't. He was just dressed up like a normal dude.
Okay.
I was looking for
what
that
cage?
Too.
Whenever he breaks them out of the raft.
No, they're all wearing those blue tech suits that are probably to be
there. No, he's all in black.
Wearing when Cap walks up to his cell. I was expecting him to be in like
he was
the
all
agent.
In black.
I didn't make that connection. That's an interesting idea. No, it may well be. Make a big point too of him dropping the shield.
Yeah, because
so you know he's probably going to have like the proton shield or whatever that he's running on the energy shield. That's probably what the part of the next movie is. Either he doesn't have a shield at all, or he's going to be having the energy shield.
But then Nomad always wear black, like all black?
No, yeah. I mean, the original suit was like dark blue or black and yellow.
I didn't think he was
yellow.
Wearing black, though.
Yeah, he was. It was all black.
He did not have his mask on. He was wearing dark clothes. I don't recall if he had a star or not.
He had his jacket on, and he was just...
No, it looked like he was wearing just like a black shirt and stuff.
Telling you. I'm going to go see it again tomorrow.
Yeah, I was like, oh, cool. They brought in Nomad. Like, they're showing Nomad at the end.
That's a good catch. I did not in any way think of that. No.
I was was looking more for him to be in the agent costume, not Nomad.
A U.S. agent?
Yeah. Well, he was the agent, right?
Well, I'd rather Nomad, though, because he was the original Nomad, and then you can play with that.
Well,
and
he's going to be on the run, so he should be.
Well, and that's another thing. The first Stinger is excellent. It makes total sense under these particular circumstances for the Avengers to end up in Wakanda.
Mm-hmm.
And I in no way saw that coming.
Yeah, I love that. That's where he's going to seek sanctuary. And
yeah.
Yeah. And obviously, T'Challa's forgiven, you know, and forgotten because it was all Zemo that framed him and everything. Yeah,
well, no, and that was a great thing, too, is he's such an implacable foe for most of the movie. He's so dangerous, but he's also the one who comes to his senses first. And he has that wonderful moment of catharsis at the end of the movie where he's confronted with Zemo and Zemo's motivations. I thought that was beautifully played, and it showed, for starters, given Batman versus Superman, I love that it showed how much more of a complex and humane character Black Panther is compared to where they've gone with Batman. So you can look at the two guys in the black uniforms with the badasses and stuff, but they're so different in terms of how they were interpreted for screen that there's no mistaking the two of them. And I love that
we went
back to Black Panther's nobility in the end there.
If anything, you might hear some Wolverine talk because of so much claw usage. You're not going to hear any Batman.
But he's so cool and collected, you know, and it's just his manifestation of his abilities is so different because Wolverine's all about taking the blows, where Black Panther, it's like brushing them off like they're nothing. He's not.
Right. I'm just saying, there's so much chink with the claws. There's a lot of the snicked with the claws and a lot of scratching and clawing. I can see it,
but they emphasize the cat aspect so much that I think that people won't necessarily.
I'm just
make
saying,
connection.
Before you get to Batman, he was so far from Batman. Never once did I look through and go, like, man, that's kind of Batmanish, because especially with no cape or anything. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't think that anybody would mistake it for Batman, especially the way they did kind of stylize his costume. They added a little color to the costume and stuff.
I like the gold. It looked good.
Yeah, it looked really good.
And I love the textures on the uniform. All those designs that are discreetly woven into the black uniform. You know, it's a great looking suit. That's the suit that I would most want to see, like on a mannequin in real life, and just be able to take in the level of detail mixed in there. But it also it almost makes more sense for T'Challa to be backing them than Tony. You know, you feel like you have a purer Avengers with him. Like there'd be less of an agenda with him. Because I don't think they've ever done that in the comics, and I think it creates such a unique situation for the cinematic universe. I want to see where they're going to go with that. But he just it fits so well, and it immediately elevates Black Panther because he's the new Tony Stark now.
That's exactly that may be how they start to push Robert Downey Jr. out of the movies. They now have they now have Wakanda and T'Challa to kind of move in and replace. You don't have that excuse anymore to keep.
Well, and I also strongly suspect that Cap's Avengers are going to be more static because these are guys who are now fugitives, and they're trapped in this layer that's, you know, they're only meeting other Wakandans. Where Tony has the impetus to go out there and find more Marvel heroes and build his new Avengers, and you're going to want armies of heroes to go after Thanos for the Infinity War, so you get the excuse to have a whole new team and bring in a bunch of new characters like Captain Marvel, for instance. Because he's already got like a decent start of a team. They've given an excuse to pull War Machine aside, which I think they need to do because two Iron Mans on a team is too many. Mm-hmm. It just dilutes Iron Man himself too much. But you've got Iron Man, you've got the Vision, you've got Spider-Man, you get Captain Marvel in there, maybe one or two other new people. And then you have just this expanding universe of characters that you can do all kinds of different stuff with. So it'd be very interesting to me to see where they go with that.
So, okay, do we have anything else to say about this movie?
I think
specifically about this movie.
The only other thing I want to add, because I've been very positive about the movie, I do want to say one caveat, though. I think that this movie was better than Age of Ultron. I still don't think it's as good as The Winter Soldier, though.
Really?
No, it's not as good as Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier had fewer characters, and it could focus more.
Mm-hmm.
And the
big reveal in that movie was just such a shocker. And it had such unexpected and widespread repercussions that you do have a feeling, as much as I love the twist at the end of this one, it's just not quite this. It's Leia is also my daughter, you know?
I'm going to have to borrow your copy and watch it again.
It's fantastic. I saw it again the other day.
It's a movie I find, like I said, Age of Ultron's been running on the cable a lot lately, and I'll watch a little bit of it, and then I'll kind of move on and do something else. Winter Soldier sucks me in again and again. Winter Soldier, again, the comparison's been made to The Dark Knight, and that's the only Batman movie that would be playing on TV, and I would get drawn into it, and I wouldn't be able to resist it, and I'd just keep watching it. Mm-hmm. Winter Soldier does that to me, too. It's just so well constructed, and I just love it.
But to me, this movie is way closer to Avengers 1 than than it is Age of Ultron.
Like, I agree.
Age of Ultron is one of my, it's better than Iron Man 3, but it's one of my least favorite.
I still need to watch it again.
It's fucking long, too.
But there's a lot of good stuff in there. That's the problem, is there's so much solid stuff in that movie and good stuff in that movie. It's just there's a lot of stuff you got to suffer through to get to it.
No, man, even some of the stuff I liked the first time around, like the Banner Stark trying to figure out how we can do stuff with the stone and stuff. All that stuff, watching it again, it's so hokey dumb. It's just really dumb. I'm just over Joss, and I told you all the one-liners. Mm-hmm. You watch again, it's even more obvious that it's just literally, they just wrote a bunch of one-liner barbs, and they just reached their hands in a bowl and pulled one out and just read it, and they just go back and forth, and they hardly have any continuity to one another. And it's just, like, nobody can say two sentences of dialogue. They have to say one line, and somebody else has to fire back a one line, and somebody else has a little slightly sarcastic one line over and over and over again. It's just, I can't stand that.
I have my spots.
It's just not good. It's not a good
game. Like, I have my jump-off points. Like, I'm watching the movie, I'm enjoying the banter.
And Ultron keeps getting more and more annoying the more.
Oh, does it? Like, I'm enjoying the banter between Bruce and Tony, and I'm starting to enjoy the party sequence, and then as soon as you get the Black Widow Hulk
bar
thing,
scene,
I'm gone.
So
I'm checked out. Yeah. I'll be enjoying the sequence where Ultron and Cap are fighting, and they're on the train with the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver, and then once they go back to stop the Vision from being created, I start to check out again, and then I'll go off and watch another channel. So I've got
the train
points.
Scene all the way through Vision getting created is some of the worst shit of any of these Marvel movies, period. Mm. period. It's not as bad as Gwyneth Paltrow becoming an extremist, and it's not that bad, but it's really, really, where the train goes off the tracks. And then the Ultron heads shoot jets out to carry the god, dude, it's all so crappy. It's all so crappy.
Even when I make it through to the Vision, then
who
when
the
they cut
storyboards Ultron heads shooting jets out to fly an 18 wheel when one of them could just pick it up and fly away. It's so, you had to storyboard that. People had to draw that, and a quorum of people had to agree that this is a good idea. Let's spend millions of dollars making it.
Yeah.
It blows my mind.
If I make it through the Vision sequence, and I have sometimes, then they cut to Ultron and Black Widow's conversation in Sokovia, and I'm gone. Or I'll come in and it's Black Widow and the Hulk in Sokovia as he's saving her, discussing running away, and then I'm gone again. I just check out on that movie so many different points.
There's no point in this movie like
that. No.
Right.
I think this movie's going to be sucking me in again and again.
Right. That's why it's way better than Age of Ultron. Way, way, way better than Age of Ultron.
But I'm still not sure about the Avengers, though.
I don't know if it's as good as the original Avengers just because it's just so.
But I will say one of the sequences that I liked the least in the original Avengers was when the three Avengers are fighting each other in the woods over Loki.
Oh, I love that scene.
I found that so. Like, one of the times we saw.
Does thou mother know you wearest her drapes or whatever? Oh, come on, dude. That was all freaking awesome.
One of the times when we saw the movie, I actually nodded off a number of times because I was just really tired. And that was one of the sequences where I nodded off because I just didn't find that to be very organic.
Dude, when Thor smashes on Cap's shield.
Oh, dude,
I didn't like
so
it.
So great. That
I was not
the,
into that.
The coming together of the movie. You are very much the minority on there.
Well, what I want to say, though, is while that's one of my least interesting scenes in the first Avengers movie, the fight between the heroes in this movie is so much better than that. So, like, leagues better, powers
you
better.
Mean, the airport.
The Civil War. The airport
scene,
sequence,
do you
yes.
You mean the one in... the one at the end or the one at the airport?
No, the airport. Because by the end, it's just Tony and Bucky and Steve. Well, no, the airport scene where all the heroes are fighting all the other heroes. It's so much more compelling than the opening sequence in Age of Ultron with all the heroes going after Hydra. It's so much more compelling than the sequence where all the heroes are fighting the Ultrons.
Because it's not good, right?
No, I like that okay. But I think it's very much better than the big fight between the heroes, the Trinity, in the first Avengers too.
Well, no, in the first Avengers is with the Chitauri in
New
York.
I'm not saying it's as good as that turnaround. That sequence where they just pan through the city and show all the action, that is an iconic moment. So, but this is better than pretty much all the other multi-hero fight moments we've had in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or any comic book universe.
I still think, and we mentioned this earlier because we watched a little clip of it, War Machine and Iron Man fighting the Iron Legion in Iron Man 2 is fucking awesome. It is so, so good, and I think that's up there too.
It is good. I think it's underrated. A lot of things about Iron Man 2 are underrated, though.
I like Justin Hammer
from
Iron Man.
Oh, yeah. He was great.
The last thing I want to say, though, is that Civil War, more than probably any other Marvel movie, at least since the Avengers, shows how important it is to invest in the characters, to earn those cheers, to build to these great character moments that get people excited about the movies and about the interactions of the characters. You can't shortcut that, and that's one of the reasons why I just have not cared to see Dawn of Justice, because it's nothing but shortcuts, like trying to throw a bunch of people at you all at once, and you're expected to care about them without them being built up. It seems like the only character that people really resonated with the audiences was Wonder Woman, because they actually spent a little bit of time showing you her being cool. Not enough time, apparently, though. But they just did the DC movies have just rushed this too much.
You're gonna, when you go see it, you're gonna be like, wow, why the fuck?
Yeah,
why was anybody make such a big deal out of Wonder Woman? Because she's barely in the fucking movie. I think they just like her because she wasn't grimacing, scowling, and she wore some color. I think the rest of that movie is so drab. People are like, whoa, Wonder Woman was so great. And she had a sitar playing in the background anytime she came. Sitar, in our review, I called it an ishtar for some stupid reason.
Hey, but you can't talk too much shit because Black Panther had his entrance music as well.
Did he? If he did, I didn't
he totally
notice.
Fucking, I didn't hear it. He totally had his entrance
drums
theme.
Or what?
No, it was just this like slightly, you know,
okay, well, there's nothing music. Slight about Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
okay.
You're going to think Xena. I'm like,
it's, oh, dude, it's.
But he definitely had his little doo 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 doo.
Oh, no,
I can't there.
If he did, so, I missed it, man.
It totally. When you see the movie again, you'll totally, you can't miss it. He does the little leap, he lands, and it's doo doo doo. I don't know what the actual song is, but you gotta fucking earn the shit. You gotta put in the time. A lot of people didn't really like the first Avenger, but you had to have the first Avenger to make Winter Soldier work, to make Civil War work. You have to fucking build this shit, and you gotta kind of build it from scratch, because that's the way the Marvel Cinematic Universe worked. Iron Man was not a home run. You had to fucking build Iron Man. You had to fucking build Captain America. They're still trying to fucking build Thor. I don't think they've quite got that together yet.
I'm still down for Ragnarok, though. I'm telling you, the more I hear about Ragnarok, the more I'm like...
I'm hoping this is going to be the one that turns it around, because I think Thor needs it at this point. Because if you look at the ratings, Dark World is one of the worst rated critically and with audiences of all the Marvel movies.
I don't know how much...
Dark World and Incredible Hulk are like the two that are really toward the bottom. Not as much as you think. I think there might be some revisitation of that. We'll have to check Rotten Tomatoes.
Right now.
Let's do that when we actually do a podcast on Iron Man 2.
I'm curious.
You have vexed them.
There's actually a link in there for Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, Iron Man 3, only 79%. People kind of came around. Iron Man 2, 70%.
Was that critics or is that audiences? I think the audiences are more kind to it.
No, 79% for both.
Well, just the fact that it's listed equally says something.
72 for both.
72 for both with audiences or critics?
Well, I don't know. It's just... Yeah, tomato meter 72%, audience score 72%. Is that what we're looking at? I thought they did usually split it. Doesn't matter. I was just surprised they were that close together just because Iron Man 3 made so much fucking money.
I still think they're going to make an Iron Man 4.
Anyway, not an Iron Man podcast. But I will say, so, okay, where do we think this movie goes from here? So there's talk about them renaming Infinity War 1 and 2. They're going to actually completely change the names of these movies. Now,
yeah,
right?
Which I think is probably a good idea. I think especially because you're going to have Justice League 1 and 2 by then. And I think they're going to really fucking shit the bed. Because it's clear that...
Dude, they are totally invested in the Zack Snyder shit show. Like, they are...
That's just it. But they're not. No, you don't understand. They're stuck with Zack Snyder because they've already put the money into it. They had already scheduled the filming to begin like 2 weeks after the movie. There's no way they could dump the director that short a time and be able to pull something together without it looking terrible on them. I think they probably needed that hit, though. I think they needed to go ahead and take that hit. They think they're going to be able to manage Zack Snyder. George Miller is actually involved producing the movie now. Because George Miller was going to do the Justice League Mortal movie back in 2007. But I think it's going to be one of those situations where you're going to have all these fucking cooks, all these executives, all these producers, all these people trying to put their stamp on Justice League, and it's going to be a fucking train wreck, even more so than it might have been with Zack Snyder.
Flash's director already left, right?
Yeah, he already left.
And there was Aquaman's director left.
There's been some talk about that. I think that'd be a good thing, though. I thought James Wan was terrible on Fast and Furious 7. I hated the direction on that movie.
You saw Jerry Conway just said, fuck you, Zack Snyder, right? Did you see that?
Something like that, yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Because that interview he did before Watchmen leaked or came back out, where he was just like, yeah, dude, I was like never really into comics, but a buddy of mine had Watchmen, and I was seeing all the sex and murder, and was like, that's what I want to see. And everybody's like, oh my God. Like, we had the fucking...
Well, I don't know about you. You know what the real bombshell was? He said he wanted to make an adaptation of The Fountainhead.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
The Fountainhead is the famous book written by Ayn Rand that helped to inspire the popularity of the Objectivist movement, which is a strong guiding force of the libertarian, the hard right libertarians. So like all these guys that have been steering the Republican Party toward far right free market notions, like Paul Ryan and such, they're all Objectivists. And just as a for example,
example, in the movie Dirty Dancing, where they wanted to really show you that the guy who knocked up the chick and then didn't help with her abortion was a total fucking douchebag. They had him pop up with a copy of The Fountainhead and try to give baby it so that he should get an education. But basically, it's objectivism espouses this amorality where essentially you do what's good for you and fuck everybody else is the most essential part of that. That your exceptionalism and your ability to create things and do great works validates whatever you want to do. And things like Ayn Rand was somebody who fled Russia and fled communism, and communism ruined her family, and they had to rebuild the United States and such. So she had her own rationale for that. But it basically just highlights the egocentricity, and it's become like a buzzword these days. And
suddenly his complete ignoring or obliviousness to all of his criticisms.
And his saying, look, I make these great movies, and you people are just trying to tear down me, the visionary. Another guy who may not be an objectivist, but has that same attitude is Shyamalan. He made that whole movie with The Lady in the Water, where he's attacking film critics, essentially, metatextually. So, yeah, that was a real, like, oh my God, thunderbolt moment. It's no wonder he wanted to make a movie about Rorschach and didn't realize that Rorschach was a parody of Ditko's objectivism by the very liberal Alan Moore. It's just, he thought he was the point of that character, so, because he's a fucking objectivist.
See, now it's a podcast because we got franked.
We did. I feel properly franked right now.
It's worth noting too, Ayn Rand is a terrible author because both
Ayn
The Fountainhead
Rand this whole time, not Ayn Rand.
I've heard both. It may be Ayn Rand, but both The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged are works of fiction, but it's like 1950s fanfic with a strong political stance. Read up on Ayn Rand or Ayn Rand. It's worth
both
checking
them
out.
Both.
They were twins.
And so it looks like Infinity War 1 or whatever that's going to be called is going to be more about these renegade Avengers, right?
I don't know what it's going to be about. Honestly, because what I've been hearing,
there's no other movie to pick up where this movie
leaves
off.
This is the thing,
off,
though.
Right?
One thing I've been hearing is that Marvel is starting to realize that they take a lot of criticism for having fairly weak, underdeveloped villains, which I still think is part of their master plan, is that they want you to focus on the heroes that are going to be in a bunch of movies, not the villains that are going to show up once and then go away. That was one of Batman's problems, is you saw the movie based on who the cool guy was.
Which is another reason why Avengers 1 is so good, is because you have Loki,
who is one of the few guys that really step up and is awesome. Yeah. So what I've been hearing is that they're going to really spend a lot of time developing Thanos for whatever their Infinity War ends up being called. Would it be awesome if it was like Thanos Quest or something? And you got, or maybe they could do a whole thing with either the Guardians or have a backdoor Adam Warlock movie where they develop. Or Captain Marvel. You can have Mar-Vell and have Thanos actually wipe this guy out in the end to show, you know, how a badass he is. But the hope is that they're going to spend a lot of time on Thanos, and that's why you need that first movie to show who this guy is and to make him more than just another one of the generic Marvel villains.
There are no other movies for these guys to appear in.
No, you got
Thor Avengers, the next Avengers movie, right?
Nope.
Ragnarok,
then you got
but
Black Panther.
I don't think they're going to be anybody in Ragnarok, though. My sincere hope is that they're not going to involve Avengers in Black Panther.
I thought Ragnarok now is basically just going to be like a space cowboy movie with Hulk and
I thought it would be.
It's a Thor-Hulk buddy movie is what I understand. That's why we don't want the Avengers in it.
Well, I thought they were going to introduce the last two gems that are missing.
Possibly, sure. But the movie isn't about the Avengers, though.
It's about
those two characters.
Yeah.
Black Panther, I sincerely hope, will not be about the Avengers. I hope it's all about showing what he does.
Yeah. I don't want any
operates.
Fucking Infinity Gems in Black Panther 1, please.
No. And Doctor Strange, I think, is going to be its own island as well.
Maybe Stinger and Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
But that's it. Just put the Stinger in, that's it. No, Spider-Man, Stinger in fucking Doctor Strange.
So they renamed the Infinity War movies?
They're going to rename it. It's not going to be Infinity War 1 and 2.
It had never been named. People were just saying it's a two-part Infinity War movie. Infinity War Part 1
and
Infinity
War
Part 2.
People weren't saying that was announced. That was the announced names at the Marvel presentation.
The Civil War was.
Part 1, Part 2. Because that's
the Civil War was called the Serpent Society first.
As a joke.
That was a joke. Yeah. It was a joke. Although I actually did read somebody who was like, I bet this actually was a Serpent Society movie, and they just shoot. It was a criticism of the movie.
Yeah. Well, I think
this
I told
was obviously a and they had to go back and redo.
Absolutely.
Like, if anything, they threw the Serpent Society in as an afterthought.
Well, I told Frank I would have loved to seen that movie.
I still want to see a Serpent Society movie.
Yeah, that would have been a great movie.
That's another thing, too. As much as I've enjoyed these last two Captain America movies, I'm ready for another director. I'm ready for another vision of Captain America. I really love these two movies, but I want to see the next Captain movie go in a different direction. I'm tired of the conspiracy. conspiracy shit. I'm tired of the
I've heard that criticism from the, where it's like, does every Marvel movie have to have some governmental conspiracy?
Yeah,
like, can we wrap up Hydra? Let's wrap Hydra up.
Was Hydra a thing anymore?
Yeah,
Hydra still? Was all in this fucking movie.
They were all over this movie. They were all over Winter Soldier.
But they're shattered. I mean, when you
they're all up in Ultra Age of Ultron. They're in the fucking. But they're still in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They did try to make a point of saying, oh, well, we wiped them out now, but the season isn't even over with yet. We don't know what's going to happen at the end of the season. So, and oh, we wiped out Hydra. That means nothing because they can turn around. And that was so arch when they did that on the TV show. Mm-hmm. It felt like Marvel said, okay, you need to stop doing Hydra stuff. We're tired of doing Hydra stuff. And they just were trying to wrap everything up real quick. I hated how they handled that. Unless they redeemed that at the end of the season, it's like that was really forced. Mm. But yeah, no, during the Marvel presentation, they showed that Infinity Gem journey, you know, but throughout all the movies. And then with the logo that was designed, obviously, the Infinity War. Cheers. Part one. Cheers. Part two. Cheers. So no, that was definitely the design. I just think that they've realized that that's not what they want to do. Because look at it. How many movies have really been good when they split it up into two like that, where they designed, built to have its own sequel? Hell, fucking System of a Down couldn't even do a double album as two separate albums without the albums coming off looking kind of weak, you know?
What about Speaker Box and Love Below, though?
Well, no, that was a double album, but where two solo albums combined to treat them as a group still. But it was their solo albums combined as a two album set, basically. Spaghetti That's a whole different thing.
Put Spaghetti Junction in now.
But Hypnotize and Mesmerize were not good as individual album.
No.
And then you've got the mocking the Hunger Games two part finale. You've got the Harry Potter two part finale. You've got the last two Back to the Future movies not being nearly as good as the first movie, and really weak by the third one. So I think there's just a stigma to that now, and I think they recognize that and they're moving away from that notion.
But see, then they'll make the mistake if they did with Batman and Superman, where you put two movies into one and cram so much into it,
or you just reconfigure what the movies are instead of spreading a story out over two movies.
I think they're not going to make. They're still going to be connected to movies, but they're not going to be so much one big movie split into two.
No.
Whereas Batman vs Superman tried to just make five movies in one. That's they're not canceling Infinity War Part 2 and making it all one.
Oh, no. I don't think they're doing that, but I'm saying I think they're going to do kind of like what they did with the
they're definitely not
Infinity
gonna
Gauntlet, where you had Thanos' quest, the first part, and of course, Infinity Gauntlet, the second part.
Well, and they could totally just call this Infinity War and Infinity Crusade. I mean, they could still be two Infinity movies, but just drop the Part 1, Part 2 because of a stigma.
Yeah.
Well, personally, I think, too, do an Infinity Gauntlet as the title of a movie, and then you can still do Secret Wars as another movie. Instead, when they combine the two, you're weakening the opportunities to do two separate movies using those words.
But you're right. They're
good words. Don't put them both together in one movie.
I think the further we get into this, though, the more your theory you gave in an early podcast that they're going to use the Infinity
Gauntlet. To recast? Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. Kevin Feige has basically said.
I think it's getting more and more likely that that could be what they
do. No, Feige said he's never going to replace Robert Downey Jr.
Who said that?
Feige has recently been saying that while he sees the Marvel Cinematic Universe as being like Bond, where over time these are just going to be stories that span decades, and yeah, at some point there will be recastings, but right now they're looking at the next 10 years, they don't want to recast anybody.
Yeah, but how long? Well, 10 years is nothing, man.
Yeah.
10 years is nothing. Iron Man 1 is already almost 10 years old.
Yeah.
It's like 8.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's nothing. Yeah. But you could say, by the time Infinity War Part 2 comes out, you've hit your decade with Robert Downey Jr., so we can recast him.
Yeah.
Just saying. Maybe a noble sacrifice in our future. Or, so it was people get in the comments and fucking help me. I haven't read comic books in a long time. Which was the one with the fucking doppelgangers?
Infinity War.
So in Infinity War, Iron Man, Tony Stark, Iron Man was the turncoat the whole time. He was the doppelganger that they didn't realize was a doppelganger. Mm-hmm. And he was secretly working for Magus, whoever the fuck the villain was in that one. And I can see with all of the mental problems he's been having, he's the one who actually flew through that Chitauri interdimensional thing and came back. I could totally see them having him have been manipulated this whole time. I'm not going to say full doppelganger, but having him be manipulated. Because you see, he's trying to break up the Avengers with Ultron, now with this with the Stankonia Accords. I can just totally see that's what they've been doing this whole time. And by the end of it, you have the Tony Stark noble sacrifice, and then he gets rebooted.
Yeah. I'm not sure I'm down with that because it kind of there's a little too much Teen Tony in there.
Guess what? You don't have to be down with it, buddy, because that's my shot that I called.
I see. I get you. But they did kind of play with some of that stuff with things like Secret Invasion, where Tony was being manipulated by Spider-Woman, who turned out to be the Skrull Queen, and he didn't know whether or not he was a Skrull duplicate. And, you know, there's continuity there that you can play with. Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yes. I think this thing is resolved.
I thought we were going to do mail now. Facebook likes Keith G. Baker, Siskoid, Google Plus follows Chris Wojcik, Google shares. Is that Liliana? Google Plusted.
Nah, that's nothing.
Nah, that's WordPress, nothing. WordPress blog follows FKA Jason of the Silver and Gold podcast at FKA Jason. Nicholas Prom of the is that Prom? Mm-hmm. Nicholas Prom of the Comic Reflections podcast. Then Ralcode 001.
I think it's Raul Conde.
Tumblr follows Martin Gray. No, Tumblr follows nothing. Martin Gray linked us in. I thought you were talking about Martin Gray linking in.
Maybe. I don't know. We can do it again. It's been a while.
Twitter follows Amanda Brandt, at the Nerds Table, Brian Collins, Carl Forrest, Chris Sheehan, Comic Art and More, Cynthia Johnson, David Gallagher, David Gallagher. My apologies.
He's the author of The Last Living Boy graphic novel and High Moon.
Franked. David Michael Latt. Digital Trends. Felicia, was that Capone? Capone?
Capcom?
I don't know. Geek Feed. What is that? The Geek?
I think it's Geek, like Sheep.
The Geek. Why are you turning the laptop more towards you and not me? What is that, Harbo's?
Harbor's Music, I think.
Oh, Harbor's. Heroes and Coffee. Horath House Publishing.
I think it's Havora.
Havorath.
I'm not sure these people can hear me when I talk.
IAG Wealth Management. IAG Wealth Management. Well, all right.
They want to make sure we're financially secure.
Yeah, you're looking at the wrong podcast. Ian Graham Lask. Oh, is that Jan DeSerma? Jan Dersima is what I meant to say, not Jan Dersima.
Yeah, it's the actual artist who I can tell too.
Way to go, Jan Dersima. That's freaking dope. Jim and Dan's Comics. Jim, what is that? Dream Remold. Oh. Oh, Dark Stars Reviewer?
I'll do some Rooster.
We're doing retweets now, or are we still? Oh, John Armstrong.
Media.
John Armstrong Media. Kazim Raham. Delicious. I prefer the beef packet. Kirk Chisholm. Larry Kim. Lucas J. Roback. Medina. Marshall Julius. The Mean Geek Podcast. What is SC King D. Ifran?
King Diaphragm?
SC King Diaphragm. Definitely Spongeworthy. Sean Beeson.
Composer.
What?
Composer.
Oh, I keep thinking that the ats are running together, so that's part of his attack. Sean Beeson, composer. Wallace Wood. The Wallace Wood?
Who's been dead for 40 years.
That's Paranormal Activity. The Whatnuts. Whatnots?
I think it's Whatnot.
The Whatnots Podcast. Women in Media. World Podcasts. Retweets from... Is it Chael Montgomery, Captain Marvel, Comics Tweets, Firestorm Fam, Keith G. Baker? What is the last one?
The Randomitable.
Twitter favorites. Adventure Fit Radio. Anthony Matskircher, PhD.
Miyazaki,
PhD. Behind the Magic. Bill Breer, Birds of Prey Podcast. The Brookins Family. Canterbury Ale House. Count Drunkula. David Golding Artist. Film and Water Podcast. The Hammer Strikes, Hawkeye, It's Plastic Man, Little Big Cast, Matage Silvar, Slivar, Michael B. Montgomery, Odell Abner Dracula, Party Roll Podcast, Samurai Beer, SBC, Samurai Bear, SBC, Satanic Hell, Silver and Gold Podcast, Thomas Keister, what is that last one, Woody Whitestell? Woody Whitstall?
Like Whitestall, I think.
Adam Blackmoon.
He tweeted us
in
groups all these hashtags.
Thanks for all those hashtags.
Say the hashtags.
The hashtags. Hashtag, what is that, Valentine's Comics? Hashtag Sunday Comics. Hashtag More Monday, hashtag Tuesday Titans, hashtag Wednesday What the Fuckery, hashtag Tuesday Tatters, hashtag Fierce Friday, hashtag After Boys Friday, hashtag Saturday Slack Ass.
I may have made some of those up.
That's why you wanted me to read them, you sumbitch.
We got Follow Fridays.
Follow Fridays from Adam Black Moon, Comic Reflections, King Size Comics, Giant Size Fun, Son of Thulu, Superman Cap Marvel, Thomas Kieser. Screwed that one up again. And now for Mighty Marvel Marching Society! The 108th stage. Sage. God, fuck, hold on. The 108th Sage. The Anti-Fascist. Bone Dragon Comics. Charlton Hero. CJ. Coffee and Comics Blog. Comic Reflections. Darren and Ruth Sutherland. I'm getting more and more DJ, morning DJ guys I go along. Dr. G, the Nerdologist. Same guy, Dr. G, Nerdologist. Sorry, I paused. It sounded like it was two different things. Drunken Dork Podcast, Fire Source, Future Primitive Comic. Was that Hollows? The Illegal Formation Podcast, Joseph Crawford, Kat Kassessa. Kevin Dardrick, please stop shaking the laptop. Please stop shaking the laptop again. Kevin Dagey, King Size Comics Giant Size Fun Podcast. Litigious? Legitictus. Marvel Inc. 2099. Michael Wagner. Monsters and Mystics. Oscar Blue Devil. The Park Fanatic Podcast. Pietro Blacksmith. That sounds like a porno version of a... Anyway, Richard Field. Ryan D. Caldwell. I'm going back up. Ryan DeLay. Stephen Wilser, Sin, Trucker Talk, Voice, Warlord Worlds Podcast. Wait, Pod Dylan isn't part of the Marvel Marching?
Nope.
Site? Oh, that's interesting. Pod Dylan, you son of a bitch.
Don't you mean Pod Dylan, you son of a bitch. How does it feel to be on your own, a complete unknown? Like a rolling stone.
The Marvel Superheroes Podcast is in no way affiliated with or endorsed by Marvel Entertainment. All characters mentioned and audio clips employed are believed covered under fair use, with no infringement intended against their copyright holders. The views expressed in this podcast are assumed legitimate, truthful, and solely possessed by the speaker.
Walk a little prouder, be an innovator, laugh a little louder, grow forever greater, we can show you how to.
In the podcast when you edit it. When I say Stankonia, can you edit in a clip from Spaghetti Junction by Outkast? That's my favorite song.
Specifically?
That's my favorite song on that album. Okay. Stankonia is an Outkast album. Yeah.
No, I have that album.
Okay. Well, you should because it's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, it's a great album.
Spaghetti
yeah.
Junction.
I also, Speaker Box, well, Love Below
and,
is a great one too.
And Bombs Over Baghdad. They're neck and neck. But
well, Bombs Over Baghdad would probably be a little bit closer thematically. Though.
I know, but I really... That's the obvious one though.
Okay.
Okay, do Bombs Over Baghdad. It's fine.
Anyhow, so
wait. So I don't know. Do we want to rank this somewhere?
Huh?
Just real quick.
No, I don't. Let's not do a rank right now.
No, I didn't mean like a top 10. Like, where do you think it's better than this, but worse than this?
I did that already.
I guess you did.
I said it was yeah,
you did. I would agree with your ranking.
Oh no. So we talked about this in the beginning. So I said in the Batman vs Superman Dawn of Justice podcast that I wasn't sure if we might have talked about this a little bit too about how Dawn of Justice may have caused a little versus fatigue, superhero movie fatigue that may hurt the box office of this movie.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit at the beginning.
Do you think that... I think that
there were a lot of people that really had their hopes up for Batman versus Superman. There were a lot of people that just were not going to believe all the negativity, and they were going to go see that movie, and they're going to love that movie, and then they've seen that movie get attacked. So there might be a whole political aspect to it where they won't see Cap versus Iron Man because all those fucking Marvel haters hating on Superman, Batman.
There are droves of people who think that Marvel pays critics to cap on DC movies.
Yeah.
They're Looney Tunes, but they are out there.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it, again, it might also be disillusionment after having been so disappointed by Batman and Superman. You might
and
just be,
Age of Ultron, right? And you said you mentioned Ant-Man. I just don't think enough people saw Ant-Man for it to have affected. It just didn't make.
Well, what's
I mean,
funny? I liked Ant-Man okay. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. It was okay. But what I've read in recent like columns and stuff and think pieces and stuff, there's been a lot of people who've kind of tagged Ant-Man as like a movie that was sort
really?
Of a tipping point
I've read
for
the
them.
Opposite. I've read the opposite.
I think it's a fun enough movie. I don't see anything wrong with liking the movie. I'm passionate about it.
I think Ant-Man was so separate, I don't think that it has any effect on any of the Marvel movies.
Mm.
I think it's just its own thing. It felt very indie almost.
Mm.
So whereas I think people would be more like, they had a downer with Age of Ultron.
Yeah, and that's like, a very good possibility too.
Marvel movie where they're going to do dirt, you know what I mean?
Well, then it seems like almost every month there's two or three comic book movies coming out. The market
well, we have a bunch of universes. They're about to start rolling out Valiant movies, you know?
Yeah, but don't you think the market's a little, I don't know, a little oversaturated?
I think that we're at a point now where these are adventure stories or these are absorbing other genres, heist movie via superheroes, you know? So I think it's honestly, they're sort of taking various genres to the next level by adding these superpowered fantastic elements to them. It's just a matter of the Marvel movies are still making a lot of money because you consistently enjoy those movies. We were talking about how people consistently love to eat at Chick-fil-A, even though you're getting basically the same meal repackaged a dozen different ways. I love Taco Bell. They've got the same basic agreement. It's repackaged a whole bunch of different ways, but it's the same fucking shit every time you go and eat that. I think Marvel has that consistency where people are going to love it just because there's a certain minimum level of quality to every single Marvel production. I think that we're still waiting for anybody else to do something comparable, with the possible exception of Fox. I think Fox has had a pretty consistent in their movies as well. They've had some terrible ones, and they're having to rebuild their franchise from X-Men Origins and some of the other X-Men movies, but I still enjoy most of the X-Men movies. I think that most people continue to enjoy them. They just came off a big high off of Deadpool.
Mm-hmm.
So Fox and Marvel are the main two that are making movies about superheroes that people really want to see and about multitudes of heroes, where DC still hasn't proven they can do anything besides Batman. And Valiant hasn't made a movie yet. So, and all those other superhero movies were mostly flash in the pans. So we haven't seen anybody build the kind of universe that Marvel has yet, but we also haven't seen them build that sustainability in terms of, you know, what kind of movie you're going to get each time you go to a Marvel movie.
And also, you don't have that event anymore, right?
It isn't as big of an event.
It's not an event because we're now at almost a decade into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, Star Wars is an event because you have such a long break of nothingness, and then a Star Wars movie? What the fuck?
Yeah.
After they put out Star Wars movies every single year, if they did Star Wars movies every single year for 10 years, you're going to start to see diminishing returns where people aren't going out and blowing up the box up. What the hell did, A New Hope Awakens, whatever fucking movie. Yeah. That movie did like 75 million on, or 50 something million on a Thursday or something. Like, ridiculous.
Crazy money. Yeah.
Where you know, what do you call it? This one just did like 25. Batman vs. Superman did 27. Like, it doubled that up. That's an event. That is a full on event. People are calling off work to go. Well, I don't think people are calling out work to go to Avengers movies anymore. And
except for me.
Because we get one every year to 6 months, right? I mean, it's just so.
We're getting a couple of those every year.
But I want this movie to make a bill.
Yeah, oh, well, it's still going to make a bill.
You think so?
No, it's going to. Dude, look, Batman vs. Superman, as much as that movie was hated on, has still made almost $900 million.
No.
There's no fucking way Civil War, as good as that movie is, isn't going to go over the bill line. How far? I don't know. But it's going to get a fucking billion. Now, I'm not even fucking entertaining that notion at this point in time. People are still surprised, genuinely surprised, that Batman vs. Superman couldn't quite make it over. And that's a movie that stalled out around the world in fairly short order. This movie's going to have more legs than that. It's a far, far superior movie, and it has a ton of commercial appeal.
I think that these characters seem to have more of an international appeal too.
Yeah,
but still, man, when you got Superman, Batman,
it's getting the bill.
That's like a bill right there. You should have made a bill.
They should have made a bill. That's part of the problem.
In our podcast, I was like, this movie's going to make $1 billion. Period. No, and dude, you're saying it's 900 million. It's like 860. That's a full like opening weekend. 40 million is a full opening weekend short.
Right.
Of 900 million.
Yeah.
So in my opinion, it's not close.
It probably does not have 40 million.
Oh
left.
No, it's not hitting 900. There's no way. So that means it was 140 million dollars short. 140 million. And if Civil War is already falling short of 200 its opening weekend, which is, people are kind of like, oh shit, it didn't even get to 200. That's weird. I think that there's a chance it may not make a bill.
It's going to make a bill.
I think it will.
Yeah.
It's going to have. It's
already
ride
made
that
200 and some odd million dollars international.
Saying, I'm saying it may be 950, maybe 975.
That's before China, you know? I mean, come
before
on.
Before China.
Yeah.
We're going to send this movie to
China.
He's
been practicing. He's been practicing. Yeah, sure. He's got really good. That 1 week when we hung out, he was.
We're going to go to China. We're going to send this movie to China. The Muslims.
Wait, what did we say about Superman? About
we're going to make Krypton great again.
Yeah, dude, so he did that joke first, and I literally heard it on two other podcasts right afterwards.
Did you really hear that?
Yeah, because he did the whole, we're going to make Krypton great. We're going to put a fence around it.
It's we're going to build a wall around Krypton. No. Okay.
Dude, I don't know, my man. Brain's not working dying right. That day, dude. It was hilarious.
We saw a bumper sticker the other day that said,
my dog.
My dog is a Republican, Trump 2016.
He took a picture of it.
Bizarre.
Okay.
That was the Mac and Joe Fix It wild weekend.
Okay.
He's going to send all the bad dogs. We're going to send all the bad dogs to China, and they're going to put them in the Mugu Gai Pan.
I remember you did that shit. Oh, fuck. That was
we're going to put them in the stir fry in the Mugu Gai Pan. Don't put Asian stereotypes in our podcast.
Fuck, I keep having spasms, man.
Oof. Okay.